We all ready? We're going to call the meeting of the Board of Technical Registration to order. Mr. Winch, can you please do a roll call?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Present.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Poos.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Edward Marley. Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery. We have a quorum.
Thank you. We're going to start with a call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38431-01H, board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal actions on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and any legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. With that said, does anybody want to address the board on an item that's not on the agenda in this call to the public? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to the adoption of minutes. So we have the minutes from our July 24 board meeting and the executive session meetings on the same day.
Mr. Chair,
let's start with the board meeting minutes.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the board meetings of July 24th.
Second.
Okay. This is for the board meeting. Okay.
Board meeting.
Any discussion or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the...
We haven't seen them yet.
We haven't seen them yet, but I move we're going to accept them.
Wait, you can't accept them?
Sorry.
It's a test.
Trying to speed this thing along. Corey reaches down soon.
Has everybody seen the minutes? Okay. Do we have a motion on the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the July 24, 2018 Board Executive Minutes.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion passes. We have two hearings on the agenda today. Okay, this is first meeting. First one is for docket P-17050, Craig Parkinson. So, oh, that's 9:30. My bad. Okay. We will start then with the enforcement agenda, starting with 6A1.
6A1 and A2 consent.
I want to discuss 6A2 separately. So 6A1 is Timothy Robinson, the respondent, case number P18072 with Rep Butte Engineering. And there was a complaint about failing to provide professional engineering services as specified and agreed upon. Board has performed the investigation and is recommending dismissal. Any discussion or motions on 6A1?
I move we dismiss the case.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Next case, 6A2 is case number HI-18036. A respondent is Richard Anderson, home inspector, or non-registrant. The board investigated a complaint. And the complaint was that someone who had an expired registration had performed an inspection for a house. The investigation revealed that that person was not present at the investigation. So Is there anything the investigator wants to bring up or anybody? I do have a question, and it's the fact, so this is a father and son or brother company that does home inspections. One of them has an expired registration, hasn't renewed it for a couple of years. It appears he didn't do this registration, but the home inspection report lists National Property Inspections as having two registrants, and it lists the registration number of the second person who didn't do the inspection, but then the website also includes his information that they have multiple inspectors. So I guess I'm surprised that we're dismissing. I understand not finding any issues with the inspection itself, but I see offering services without registration being an issue.
You will see the father's case next month.
Perfect. All right. Thank you. Okay, so we have a discussion. Is there any motions on this case?
I'll make a motion to dismiss.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Okay. 6B1 is a complaint proposed to be resolved by a letter of concern, HI 18005, Steve Haldeman, home inspector. There was a complaint that he made a false statement when he reported conclusions on a report. There was an EAC convened, and the board is recommending that we issue a letter of concern reminding respondent to prepare future inspections in accordance with the standards of professional practice for his own home inspections. Do I have a motion for the letter of concern or any discussion on this item?
I move we accept the staff recommendation to issue a letter of concern as written in the packet.
Okay.
Second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Let's see. We want to get to some people or keep going before the 9:30? Let's keep going before the 9:30. We'll take care of some of these cases. Item 6C1, case AL 18006. This is respondent is Lewis Ward, alarm agent, and it's in reference to an alarm sale at 9913 East Main Street in Mesa. The board received a complaint alleging respondent had conducted an alarm system while his license was in expired status, and there were some other claims about his work. The board has reviewed the case, and it's recommending a consent agreement, including assurance of discontinuance of practice, letter of reprimand, state suspension and probation, an administrative penalty of $1,000, cost of investigation of $181. Any discussion on this item?
I move that we offer the consent agreement, and if not signed within 30 days, proceed to formal hearing.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes. Let's see. How about, I know there's people here for items, okay, there's nobody for, there's a call in Mr. Winters for Jared Parrish on 6D3, but it's a signed consent agreement. Is that what we want to make, or I was thinking maybe we move to the consent agenda all the signed consent agreements. Unless we want to take that separately. This is
was all a D?
Yeah.
All a D?
Yeah, 6D3, Jared Parrish is the attorney on that case.
What you're asking, can we consent all?
6Ds.
Not all four of them.
6D1, 2, 3, and 4 is what we would want to do, but I don't know if we want to have that call separately anyway.
I do have the number. I don't want the home inspection. Is he really wanting to call Mr.
He did indicate he just was available to be involved.
Okay. I'm assuming if he's just available and doesn't really need to speak, he already signed the consent agreement, we can move ahead with this. So, is there a motion on, for the items on 6D? To consent.
Four of them.
Chair, I'll make a motion that we accept the signed consent agreements for items listed under D. Mm-hmm. Do I need to list those?
Sure.
P18-063. P18046, AL18008, and AL18007.
Okay. So we have a motion to move this item to the consent agenda. Any second? Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. We still need a motion to approve the opera consents.
I'll move that we accept the signed consent agreements in items 61 through 4, cases P18-063, P18-046, AL18-008, and AL18-007.
I think we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Mr. Niles, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Let's see. Let's keep one in order until 9:30. Item 6C2. This is case number P18042. Respondent is Mardonio Talavera. And this is in regard to the McMillan residence. There was a complaint in November of 2017 alleging that respondent had failed to provide the technical knowledge and skill required in the design. The board has investigated and it's offering a consent agreement. So if everybody who's here to speak to the board would identify themselves, please.
Shanks Lenhart, I'm counsel for Mardonio Talavera, who is out of the country, so I'm not calling today.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. And Mr. Hunt. Okay, is there anything you'd like to say to the board before we consider this case?
Yes, members of the board, again, as I indicated, my client regretfully cannot appear today. He is out of the country for work in Malaysia, and it's, as I understand, about 3 a.m. His time, so I'd love to speak on his behalf. You'll see in the materials that we've been in negotiations with Mr. Hunt regarding the terms of consent agreement. We proposed a revised consent agreement that our client would consider, which is a modification slightly of the consent agreement that Mr. Hunt proposed, primarily changes being reduction in administrative penalty and some clarification on the scope of the restriction. I won't belabor the point, assuming you all have the materials. This is a somewhat unique case in the sense of it's quite an old project and it's in an area in which Mr. Talavera no longer works. He doesn't do residential structural engineering or civil engineering in any capacity. And we did have sort of conflicting initial decisions by the independent engineers as to whether or not it was a violation. And so in light of some of those mitigating circumstances, we felt that the modified agreement we submitted was fair. And Mr. Talavera's primary concern is he does not want to be restricted or impacted in his current work, which is in the oil and gas industry, based on a project that was in 2006 on a residence. So we propose terms which hopefully clarify that and make sure that there's not an overbroad scope that would impact his current position. And reduce some of the penalty in light of some of the mitigating factors that we put in. So if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer them, but that's the summary of what he would say, I think, if he were here.
Thank you. And just for the board's reference, the offer consent includes a letter of reprimand, state suspension, and probation while the other terms are complied with, an indefinite restriction of practice in structural engineer until he passes the 16-hour structural exam, no advertising of structural engineering, an administrative penalty of $3,000 and a cost of investigation of $623. So I don't know, does anybody on the board have any thoughts or discussion on this case?
My issue is that it's so old and you have conflicting reports between the engineers. I'm not getting this. It's a very old case. So I'm not really in agreement that this really has any validity.
And I think with the EAC not having, you know, Claude and Mr. Baker and Mr. Sturgeon, who wrote the original reports, kind of did a disservice to EAC. Reading through Claude Baker's report, it was, you know, he pretty much spelled out, you know, why all this stuff really didn't matter. Now, you know, in the drawings, you know, some of the things that were complaints were wasn't adequately detailed, but it got built. You know, the splice in the beam wasn't shown in the drawings, but you know, that must have been a fabrication issue that happened during construction. They talked about the camber on it. This guy never received any shop drawings to determine if that was actually ever put in. You know, he kind of did the drawings, and then, you know, he didn't do any contract administration, but he might not have been hired to do any contract administration. So I think some of the blame that's being pushed on him, you know, maybe should have went, you know, to the contractor or, you know, whoever was building it or the city who went out and inspected it, or, you know, I think some of the things that were, you know, passed on to him in the complaint part and some of the finding parts, you know, might not be, you know, would not be his fault. I think also the, you know, some of the, I didn't quite read through, you know, follow all the calculations of, but it looked like he was basing everything on the complainant. Was basing everything on current building codes and not, you know, what was in place at the time and the location where this, you know, standard of practice, the date and, you know, location where this was down in Marana. I think a complete restriction of practice is, you know, probably unwarranted, but maybe a restriction on single family homes or similar structures, you know, may be warranted. I don't know. It just seems like this is a lot of
penalties.
Well, and excessive. I think it was a lot of hoopla about something that, I mean, no one stated, you know, the whole complaint was, oh, there's some excessive deflections, but there was no failure. You know, I didn't notice anything where they were saying there was excessive drywall cracking, you know, that there was any actual damages, just that this guy walked in the roof and it was bouncy. It was what I got out of it.
It's like a third homeowner, too. Right. Sensibly.
And, you know, they were saying, oh, there's no lateral system. Well, if there was no lateral system, the house would have just fallen over in a windstorm. So,
please, we're on agenda item 6C2, case P18042, respondent is Mardonia Talavera. So, Mr. Madison, you were...
I'm done.
Okay, you sure?
I'm positive.
Okay. So, I want to ask you what you would like to do then. My only question is, you know, are there any technical issues that the public needs to be protected from? And if there are, then are we concerned about just residential, or do we worry about any habitable structure or anything else, or no? Or, you know, how would you like to, you're the structural guy, how do you see the issues?
Let me ask a question first. Does the statute of repose have anything to do with this? It's so old.
No. I think if, really? If there's a public safety concern.
It's in perpetuity, though.
Yeah. There's no time limit jurisdictionally here at the board.
Okay.
And I don't see a concern for safety of the public on this either. I think the alleger was kind of potentially a little bit overzealous in his approach on this. Because, you know, he wrote a report saying, oh, all this stuff was way overstressed, and then then you had the, you know, Clark Baker report that said, well, I re-examined it and didn't really find that, and so...
But the EAC looked at it and thought there were issues, and so did the other assessor, right?
They did.
Okay.
But, I mean, is this, do I consider this guy a threat to public safety? I mean, he already has a restricted practice. It sounds like he works in mining and piping and things like that, so, I mean...
Well, he does, but he doesn't have a restriction of practice.
No, he doesn't, but, I mean, if we did a restriction of practice for single-family homes, I mean, I think, I mean, really the one issue on this seemed to be the cantilever beam. That was kind of the main issue on it that, you know, started the whole thing. And it might not be a design thing. I mean, if you had the splice in it, you know, it could have been not been cambered properly. I mean, there's a lot that's unknown that really wouldn't be a design issue. I mean, even restriction of practice on a single-family home, I mean, if you wanted to design a wood frame box with a truss package on it, I mean, that's not really the problem on this. It was that, I mean, I suppose you could do a restriction of practice of a cantilevered roof beam on a house, but it seems a little silly. I mean, you know, I think there was some issues with his website and things like that, you know, advertising services and with people that weren't there and, you know, some ticky-tack stuff. But threat to the public, I just don't see it in this case.
Okay. And the other thing that came up was advertisement as a structural engineer when he has a civil license.
Right, and I think that's part of the website thing, which I don't know if that's has that been addressed, you know?
Yeah, that was correct. And the other issue was the firm registration, which was corrected.
Thank you.
Sounds like you have a concern that might warrant a letter.
Or a reprimand? I mean, it's up to you what you want to... I recommend, Jason.
I mean, I think you know some of this. I think the you know the their counter proposal, I think is not quite correct either. You know, they want letter of concern, but you know, but then some of this other stuff. So I don't know. I'm open for you know suggestions. My thoughts are, you know, it's not really a public safety thing. It sounds like there are some website problems and things that needed to be addressed. It sounds like they have been.
Do you want to adopt or propose consent, but change the letter of concern to letter of reprimand? We can't do a letter of concern with a consent agreement.
Right. Well, exactly. And that, you know, that was one of their corrections on it, which we can't really do.
Right. Actually, I think in the recent consent version, because I spoke with Mr. Hunt about that, we had just removed that altogether. So the most recent proposal was not have a letter recommend.
Okay.
Is he explaining that distinction?
So the letter of concern, is that the one that just goes in the file?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not just
this one. We can do that, right?
Correct.
We can redo this consent agreement.
No consent. You would just issue a letter of concern. Okay. If you want a letter of reprimand, that would require consent.
But the other things that we would have in the consent agreement is that the no advertisement of structural engineering and some of the other issues.
Right. Which we could do. We could do a consent agreement that wouldn't have to include a letter of reprimand. Correct?
True.
Would just with the restriction of practice, or not restriction of practice, but advertising and for registration and all that stuff.
Dismiss these costs.
Yeah.
Not our costs.
You could if you want.
But why?
But why, yeah.
So we did have to investigate the case. There were violations in the case.
So, I mean...
Keep the cost of investigation then, but dismiss the penalty.
Yeah. Or reduce it to the cost.
So to you guys.
There's no public safety problems.
Is there a motion?
I don't see a reason for administrative penalty. Cost of investigation, okay. That seems reasonable. You know, something with the...
yeah.
If you don't like it.
With the...
Are you wanting to remove the restriction of practice?
Yes. I don't think that's necessary. I think the advertising thing, obviously is a deal. The firm registration is a deal. So, you know, typically if we have a firm, obviously the firm was not registered at all at the time of this happened, is that correct?
Yes.
So that, what are we, 250 is what we typically do on that. So I guess I'll make a motion for this.
Sure. Yeah, we're going to move it. Go ahead.
That we issue a consent agreement addressing, the advertising website issues. I guess we're going to have to work out this up. The lack of firm registration at the time that the project was completed, administrative penalty of $250, cost of investigations, obey all laws, blah, 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 not 130 days, formal hearing.
Perfect. Did the blah, blah, blah provide enough guidance for everybody on redrafting?
Yes.
Okay, I think it makes sense. So.
Are we restricting the structural?
No restriction.
I think you're reducing it to $250 penalty, cost of investigation, no advertisement. And I think there's no restriction of practice, no state suspension or probation either, and no letter of reprimand. Those are being removed.
Right. Okay. And basically it's firm registration violation and the concern about the website issues.
Do you then
want to
change the findings of fact?
Yeah, I think Jason, part of his motion was to modify the findings of fact to reflect his discussion that the issues, including the advertisement, and the lack of firm registration, not necessarily the technical knowledge and skill issue. Is that right, Jason?
Yeah. That's
interesting.
Yes, sir.
Does that also include the conclusions?
Yes.
Yes. The findings of fact and conclusion law would be revised for that area.
Mr. Chair, is there a time frame within which the board would like the administrative penalty to be paid?
Jason? It's $250. 60 days?
30 days.
Okay. 30 days.
For both the administrative and the cost of investigation.
Okay.
Get all that?
Second.
Aye.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. So once you got everything? Okay. If not, we'll go back to the audio. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, our independent advisors here.
So we're going to take on the hearings? Is that what you're telling me, Melissa?
Yes.
Thank you.
So we're going to 5A?
Aye.
Okay, we're going to handle the 5A cases. So we'll start with disciplinary hearing 5A1. And my computer's loading, so I need a minute. Okay, this is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with Craig Parkinson is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona Board of Technical Registration.
Yeah.
Subject of this hearing is set forth in the complaint notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there have been violations of the board statutes and rules and whether disciplinary action is warranted. Can we do a roll call, please?
Dr. Oliver Angel?
Here.
Jason Puth?
Here.
Neil Jones?
Here.
Andrew Everone,
here.
Jason Addison,
here.
Ed Marley, Eugene Montgomery, Jack Gilmore,
here.
Graham Cora,
I'm here too.
Steve Engel.
The train geologist. Okay, let the record show that the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint and notice on hearing and all pleadings of record. Will the parties please identify themselves?
Mr. Chair, Scott Donald on behalf of that, as opposed to proceeding with a hearing, the board consider a consent agreement that is before the board in this matter.
Thank you. And would you want me to describe the consent agreement, or would you want to describe the consent agreement?
I would be more than happy to part of the consent agreement.
Please.
It is in the board materials. Essentially, the consent agreement in Mr. Parkinson's case, Mr. Parkinson is a registrant, and this case came before the board as a result of a ruling in a federal case. And it has to do with a couple of reports provided by Mr. Parkinson. Mr. Parkinson ultimately was sanctioned in the case. He had to disgorge money as well as having a penalty and interest. Mr. Parkinson has had a substantial financial negative impact as a result of this case. As a result of his behavior leading up to this case, I believe that the consent agreement is an appropriate resolution. And the consent agreement of Parkinson would be voluntarily relinquishing his Arizona registration, as well as paying board costs and fees for prosecution of the case.
Thank you. Can we just act on it as opposed to? Okay. So is there any discussion from the board on the offer to voluntarily surrender license and pay cost of investigation?
Mr. Chair, I move we accept the signed consent agreement.
We have a motion.
Second.
Second from Mr. Everode. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion passes. Next item on the agenda is 5A2, and this is the case of Thomas Romeo, non-registrant. Is it a similar case of the previous one, so we don't go into the whole hearing thing? Okay. Is there anything you want to tell us about the case?
Mr. Chair, this case is slightly different in that Mr. Romeo is a non-registrant, and the activity he's engaged in involved actually manufacturing a seal based on another registrant's number, and then using that on various documents. In this case, I believe an appropriate consent is the one before the board, which involves a civil penalty in a total amount of $10,000, repayment in 24 months, effective date, and reimbursement to the board of all costs and fees incurred to date in prosecuting this case. As he is a non-registrant, the options are limited in prosecution, but I believe that this represents a fully fair resolution for the board.
Okay.
Can we also turn this one over to the Attorney General? It hasn't been done yet.
So well, if he signed a consent agreement, it has been referred to the Attorney General already? Okay. And he signed a consent agreement?
Yes.
Mr. Romeo, okay. Thank you. Any additional discussion?
I move we accept the consent agreement.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Motion passes. We're done with those. Let's try to get through.
There's a lot of people here, so we're sweating the book.
How about we take 6C4? Theodore Gussard. You see here? Oh, that's a call in.
Telephonic.
Thank you. Let's do that one, please.
How many are you doing a call right now?
Yeah. Did he specify any time or no?
No.
Okay.
Just kind of last minute.
Okay. Six C four. Fine-tooth home inspections.
This is Ted.
Hello, may I please speak with Mr. Gussard?
That's me.
This is Kurt Winter, the Arizona Board of Technical Registration, here at the Arizona our board meeting, and I'm just going to put you through to the board members.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Guzzard. Alejandro Angel. I'm the chair of the Board of Technical Registration. So we're going to start discussion on your case. It's agenda item 64, case number HI-19003. And this was regarding home inspection in Flagstaff, where the board received a complaint that you perform an inspection with an expired registration that had already been canceled by the board. So is there anything you would like to say to the board?
Well, there was a case before that that I didn't know about, that my my certification had run out, expired, and I was not aware of that. I think you guys read that. Mm-hmm. But things have not been very easy after that. My marriage is on the rocks, and my grandson was 3 months premature and didn't make it. And I haven't been working as an inspector, and my cards are maxed out, and I was trouble finding work. And so I did what I had to do to feed my kids, and I did a couple inspections, knowing that I wasn't certified, and I know I was wrong, but I had to feed my kids. Since then, I have found a job, and things are back, not where they were, but at least everybody's eating, my house is safe, but there was no real excuse for the inspections that I did, but I had what I felt was a legitimate reason. I know it was wrong, but I had to do what I had to do, and that's really all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Gossard. So what we have on the agenda is an offer of a consent agreement with an assurance of discontinuance of your home inspection practice. We had three violations, the home inspections with the canceled license, advertisement, and having a firm doing inspections without firm registration. So we have a civil penalty of $2,000 and a cost of investigation of $111. I understand his circumstances. I was very concerned that we had already made him aware that his registration had expired, his certification, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and he still performed those inspections. So, I don't know. What's the board's pleasure?
I'll make a motion to offer the consent agreement as written.
Okay.
Okay,
so we have a motion on the floor, Mr. Gossard, to offer you a consent agreement, as I read it to you, for discontinuance of any home inspections, a civil penalty of $2,000, and a cost of investigation of $111. I think the payments, is it over 24 months?
24 months.
24 months. So that's the motion that's on the floor. If you choose not to sign the agreement, the motion specifies that this would go to a hearing process. So, do we have a second on that motion?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Motion passes. Mr. Gussard, so you will be contacted by the board with the consent agreement for your review.
Yes, sir.
And we appreciate you taking the time to appear today.
I really appreciate the work you guys do. There's been a couple of things going on, but you guys have been very fair. Mr. Thacker's been very fair. And I just appreciate all the work you guys do for the state. I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. How about let's do 6C3, and then we'll be done with the Cs, and we'll be able to get to everybody that's...
No, you got 5 and 6 left, too.
Oh. You're right. Let's do 6C3, then we'll go to the 5 and 6, which have people here. Okay, so this is case number P018, agenda item 6C3, with David Escalante, investigator Mr. Hunt. This was a complaint we received that the respondent... fraudulently applied the seal of David Garcia Costa on electrical remodel. Mr. Garcia is the alleger. Respondent practiced the profession of electrical engineering without registration. That's the allegation. So we have, Mr. Hawk, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have an admission of at least three projects.
Yeah, actually back in March we had a similar case with Mr. Escalante, and he signed a consent or fine of $20,000. This complaint came in right before the last case went to the board. Otherwise it would have been included with. That's the reason for the consent agreement that's offered currently the way it is, without fine. We fined him $20,000 a few months ago. So it would have been, it's the same time frame. It just came in a little bit after the first one explained.
Okay.
And we do have a sign.
And did we refer this one over to AG2?
Yes.
We have a signed consent for this?
For this case. The insurance discontinuance and trial investigation.
But he already signed the one in March with the penalty and the bigger issues. Okay.
Right. So. This one really should have been lumped into that one.
Right.
This came in too late for that to happen.
The only question that, something that stood out at me when I looked at it is, the alleger is Garcia Costa, and so is the attorney for the respondent. Is there any relationship? That's a big coincidence. Okay. Good. Thanks, Mr. Hunt.
So I move that we accept the signed consent agreement for this matter.
Second.
Is this one actually signed?
Yeah, we learned that it has been signed.
Okay.
Yes, it is. Okay. Any additional discussion? Let's vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. We'll move to item 6C5. This is case P18002. Respondent is Richard Moore, registered architect from RMA Design Group. And this is in reference to the True Faith tenant improvement. Mr. Thacker. This was, the complaint was improper use of a seal against the respondent for signing and sealing a professional document not prepared by the registrant or its bona fide employee. So, if would the parties identify themselves, please?
I'm Richard Moore with RMA Design Group.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Mr. Thacker. Mr. Moore, anything you'd like to say to the board?
Well, first of all, I did not sign a document I don't do CAD, so I don't prepare my documents. I have CAD drafters, three or four, that prepare my documents for me. I design, review, and approve everything before I put my stamp on it. So to say that I sold my stamp or put my stamp in a document that I didn't prepare just simply isn't true. I didn't prepare the physical document. Because again, I don't do CAD, I'm not a CAD operator, I have people that do that for me. But I certainly reviewed and did the design and made sure that everything was code compliant before I submitted it. And he's not a bona fide employee, but I have no employees. I hire people out on a contract basis to do my CAD work.
And who was the contract with? Who was the ultimate owner and who did that owner contract with? You or the designer?
The owner contracted with the person that did. He contracted with the person that did the CAD, who contracted with me.
Okay. In the way of explanation, that's what I think the issue in this case is.
Right.
Because the contract is, it's hard for you to say that you're in a personal, in a position of responsibility when you're actually subcontracting to somebody who is not licensed and is not your employee. So they are actually in responsible charge of that project instead of you. And that's why there's that rule describing what a bona fide employee is and how to meet that test. So if the client had a contract with you and you subcontracted a drafter to do the work for you, that would be okay. But the other way around can create a lot of issues. I'm not saying that's necessarily what you're intending to do, but that creates a lot of issues, and it has in the past for us. So. Is there any discussion from the board or thoughts? Questions?
I agree.
The consent agreement that we have is a letter of reprimand, a $1,000 administrative penalty, and a $100 cost of investigation. What's that?
103.
103. I apologize, Mr. Madison. So, is there any other discussion from the board or Mr. Moore? Anything you'd like to say to the board?
No.
Okay.
I move we offer the consent agreement. If not signed in 30 days, proceed to formal hearing.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any additional discussion? Like, so Mr. Moore, I don't think you did anything intentional, but I do recommend that you read the board statutes. It'd be helpful in this case. And I appreciate you being here. So, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Okay, 65. We will do 6C6 now. This is case number HI-18033. Respondent is Stephen Bartolome. Hopefully I said it right. It's a home inspection in Mesa. This was a case that was heard by the board in July, and there's been subsequent discussions since then. So if everybody could please identify themselves.
Hey, good morning. My name is Stuart Gross. I'm here on behalf of Steve Bartolome.
Thank you, Mr. Gross. Is there anything that...
There's more there. Steve Bartolome is here.
Yeah, he's our investigator, Mr. Will.
Oh, the guy to the left.
No, the guy in the blue shirt.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry, and I'm Steve Bartolome, the home inspector.
Thank you, Mr. Bartolome. My bad. Okay. So would you like to say anything to the board at this point on this case?
Yes. I've been recently retained, so I may not be as thoroughly familiar with all the facts as everyone else is here, but I have reviewed probably everything that everyone else has seen. My client is obviously not here today to tell you that he didn't do anything wrong. I know that's been thoroughly discussed from everyone. What we wanted to discuss today was the proposed consent agreement. Everything, the fines, through I think it was 1A through C, is completely acceptable. The problem is with the requirements, and by the way, I appreciate that there was a second consent agreement that was offered, because I understand that the first one was complete revocation. The second one is more of a, sounds in more of a probationary term, except that the probationary term is almost identical to a revocation, because it would require my client to have a licensed individual to follow him in every home inspection. Obviously, that's an unworkable thing, because he would be making no money on any of these inspections, because you'd have to pay the person to come with him. I wanted to talk about possible alternatives. I don't know if that's something we can do today. One of the suggestions I had was that my client wear a body cam that runs continuous video. I understand that there are ways to edit videos, but if you are able to check the metadata, you can confirm that videos haven't been edited. And that way, almost everyone gets exactly what they want, because you can see exactly what he's doing throughout the inspection. He can submit those videos either on a regular basis or intermittently. And that way there's some assurances. I understand that there's concerns here about the public safety. I'll note that what I find interesting about this is the complainant actually said a lot of great things about the home inspector, which I found a little unusual considering the nature of what went on. But again, not saying this was an entirely victimless crime, but there was obviously nothing that was taken. There was no damages here. There's really no fraud committed here either. And I think that the penalty of the significant fines and the probation is sufficient. It's just the terms of the probation that I think is you know, a little harsh.
I'll speak for myself. There might have been nothing taken, but there was certainly a violation of the public trust, and put it in great doubt Mr. Bartolome's moral character. So that, I think that's what the board is acting on, not necessarily what was taken. So I don't know, but does anybody have any comments on what you've heard so far? I'm open to exploring options, but I don't like the idea of the body cam. Not because it can't work, but because you're putting a huge administrative burden on the board to be checking videos and see that they have been edited and that they've been done for every home inspection. So instead of the registrant who committed the offense having to, you know, deal with it, then we're having to deal with it. So that's my concern with it. If there's a better solution, I'm open to it.
Well, unless we wanted to increase the administrative penalty to cover those costs. If it's putting the burden back on the board, then they should be paid for their time for that. I mean, that would be, you know, an alternative.
Right, but we have to quantify how much that is, and I think it's hard because we're not in the business of checking body cams.
Right, but, I mean, you know, you increase the administrative penalty to, you know, well, I guess we're going to have a problem with that, with the limitation on it, so we probably can't do that.
So I agree with Alejandro, but I don't think it's a good idea. So what's another alternative? Do you have any other options you want to propose?
Well, I mean, I guess the other option would be, you know, eliminating, you know, that the requirement of having someone go with them, with, I guess, an alternative of having him sign an affidavit on his own and submitting that for every job. You know, I understand the concerns of the board. I do. I mean, I'm not, you know, suggesting that this was, you know, a nothing activity, it didn't mean anything. I'm sure that if I was a homeowner and I saw this, I would be upset as well. But I think that my client has never had any, you know, since 2003 when he became the registrant, has never had any other complaints. You know, so I understand the concern of taking someone's word, but an affidavit is also a sworn document that comes with repercussions, because if he does lie, it's a perjury offense, and that could be, you know, referred to criminal prosecution. So I think that alone is probably penalty enough.
Well, I think we had the discussion last time. I mean, I see you're saying, you know, he's going to have to pay someone to go with him, but didn't we discuss it could be the realtor? We tried to get away from the homeowner because that would put him in jeopardy if they didn't sign the affidavit.
If I can speak real quick, the consent decree says I can't pay anybody to be with me, my firm can't pay anybody to be with me, and they have to sign an affidavit that says they watched me for every second of every home inspection, which means I have to find someone that is willing, that has a license, that's willing to come with me for free every day, and then follow me on the roof, follow me in the attic, follow me in the crawl space, sit in the bathroom with me, because that's what the consent decree says. They have to sign an affidavit that says I was within their view every second of every home inspection, and I can't pay them, and my company can't pay them. So it's impossible.
I would say there's also some significant liability concerns that would probably be on behalf of the homeowner, possibly the state, although I'm not sure, because if that, let's say that person that's supposed to follow him, if they go onto a roof or, you know, somewhere where they fall and get hurt, that could be another issue, which obviously everyone wants to avoid.
There is also the voluntary surrender option, which I understand the board had considered as well.
I would vote for the affidavit would be enough. That would be appropriate.
Mr. Donald also has a question.
Well, I think mine was probably akin to something from the last board meeting, but it might be possible to have in any home inspection contract an additional page added that is essentially a notification to the homeowner of this action before the board, and a statement that the homeowner will sign that they are either going to accompany Mr. Bartolomeo on the home inspection or that they are waiving accompanying them on the inspection, but that they are aware of this action before the board and the basis for the action.
I like that. I don't like the other idea of an affidavit. I mean, Mr. Bartolome just flat out lied to the board already until he saw the video, so I can't take his word at this point.
And just for clarity, it doesn't say he necessarily paid, he can't pay the party. It's, you know, that person can't work for him because he would have some authority over that person, which I'm sure you can understand. And boy,
I'm open to the public disclosure issue. I mean, I think that actually is better than having to explain every time why somebody's walking around with him.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah,
as well.
That's okay.
Just to make sure what we are suggesting we change, it's in only one item in the order. It's what we're changing, and it's the item D of the order, which covers third-party observer. And what we're saying is that we would change that third-party observer and replace it with something, with a disclosure to the homeowners that there's been this case, and that as a result, they, you know, we request that they either accompany the home inspector during the inspection or waive their right to do that. Is that what I understood, Mr. Donald?
Yes.
Roughly?
Primarily that it provides notice to the homeowner of this action, the basis for this action. But I would ask, Mr. Chair, under that section of the consent, the third-party observer, there are two other paragraphs. One dealing with the requirement corresponding to maintain a log of all home inspections conducted, and one that you will maintain a schedule of all pending home inspection engagements. Is it the intent of the chair that those two paragraphs continue to apply in this situation?
I think so, in the sense that that's how we can verify that, you know, we can contact, you know, a few of the homeowners and verify that they've been receiving that disclosure.
So,
did you guys have any comments on that? Questions?
Yeah, the only comment I would have is that typically for a home inspection, a homeowner does not sign any kind of agreement. So I'm a little unclear. Well, if you are the buyer, you're the one that's getting the home inspection. I mean, you know, so usually it's not the seller that is going to sign anything. So I don't know really how that would work.
I typically have no contact with homeowners.
I'm good with the original agreement.
I mean, that is true. I mean, he works for the buyer, not really the seller.
Yeah.
So the problem would be the buyer. You'd have to walk around with him, but he'd waive his right because it's not his house.
He doesn't care, yeah. Well, do we want to do it with the seller's agent?
Seller's agent.
Well, I mean, yeah. I see your point. Typically, you don't have an agreement with the seller, but this isn't typical.
No,
I mean, you know, really the person that should be covered is the person whose house you're in, because the buyer that you're working for isn't going to be the one that's going to be harmed. And in this case, wasn't the one that was harmed. So, you know, it's different. But it would be, that would be an option, and it should be the person whose house you're going into would have to sign, you know, that either they're going to, you know, observe or that they waive their right to observation. And it could be the home, you know, it could be the seller. It could be the seller's, I believe the seller's realtor could probably do it too, as an agent of the seller.
Seller or seller's agent, yeah.
Right.
And the other question is, how long would we want him to do this for?
Well, the intent was to do this during the entire term of his probation.
Right. It was 5 years.
That's
the only thing that seems like a long time to me to be doing this. I see more like a couple of years, but... Because I'll be honest, I mean, I think this will have an impact on his business. But, I mean, it's not our fault that this happened.
Not as much of an impact as revocation.
Right.
That's true. And we're here to protect the public trust.
Right.
As best we can.
So.
Right.
I'm getting uncomfortable writing a specific set of rules for this individual. I think that the agreement that we have on the table is about as far as I'm comfortable going.
But for a 5-year period.
As it's written there, yeah.
So let me ask
you. To me, the question is...
I'm sorry. I mean, how would this work? So I want to sell my house. The guy who wants to buy it hires the inspector. So I don't know the inspector. I don't know any of his background. So the real estate agent for the buyer would sign off.
No. The real estate agent for the buyer would have to send a form to the real estate agent for the seller and the seller to notify him of this case and what happened, and that they either will agree to, you know, observe or... sign a waiver on it. Now, the only problem I could see with that would be if the seller doesn't want him as the home inspector,
right?
Could just say,
so that was my next point. So you do that to me. I said, I don't want him. I'm not going to sign this. I'm not going to walk around with him. But maybe his agent might. But then it's not going to work out. I wouldn't hire him. I wouldn't let him do it.
Well, this was his second chance to redeem himself. This board still gives him his certification, allowing him to enter people's homes. So he needs to demonstrate, in my opinion, to you that he's safe and can be trusted.
So who's going to watch? Who's going to walk around and watch that? You can't hire another agent or another inspector.
Right. Well, that's why we're talking about the notice, the waiver, or the notice in the contract that says
that's on the buyer's side.
Right, but the contract.
No, we're gonna ask that the seller's side get this disclaimer or this notice, and they either say yes, I'll walk around with them, or I understand and I waive the need to walk around.
And it's either
so if the seller doesn't want to deal
with the real estate agent.
What's that?
It's either the agent or the real estate agent. Or the home inspector or the real estate agent could be the person who walks around. I mean,
no, the person who walks around would be the seller, or the seller's representative would walk around with them, which is the seller's agent. The idea being here, if they are willing to, you know, walk around and take the burden of having to do that, they can use Mr. Bartolome. If they don't, then they'll need to get a different home inspector.
And you're saying in the original consent agreement, I can pay someone to walk around with me, but they can't be an employee of mine. I don't think
that. No, I didn't say that. The point is that it can't be somebody that you have influence over. So if you're employing somebody to walk around with you, it says it can't be an employee. You can't employ somebody to walk around with you. That would be a visitor. But a real estate agent could walk around with you.
So could it be the buyer's agent?
Yes.
Yeah.
The realtor?
Yeah.
Sure. It could even be the seller's realtor. I think the way it reads is it has to be a regulated, someone that's regulated. So it could be a home inspector, but the realtors would be from the board realty or whatever it is. So, you know, they're a regulated profession too. Just so you're not getting someone off the street that, you know, isn't really have, you know, any oversight on them. It could probably almost be a general contractor too, because they'd fall under the ROC. I'm pretty sure that's how the consent, you know, consent reads.
Licensed and regulated by the state, their profession or occupation reasonably related to the home inspection industry.
Right, so it could be a home inspector, it could be a realtor, it could be a contractor. I would think that would fall under that.
Right. Just be careful if it is a realtor, you can't pay commissions or any other compensation that might look like a commission to a realtor for using your services.
But obviously the realtor would have an interest. I mean, they want to sell the house. That was...
Right, and you wouldn't really have to pay him. I mean, you know, you could be a home inspector and just, you know, for personal reasons, not want to go into a house without having a, you know, the realtor present, so, you know, a second person. You know, I don't see that as being burdensome. It's just, you know, you schedule the home inspection and either the buyer's realtor or the seller's realtor, you know, you ask them to be there at the time. Or you have to, or take another home inspector with you, or a general contractor or someone, but...
But would we need them to sign off that they had accompanied them, or that there was a waiver? We would need somebody to sign off, they're likely to ask why.
Well, I don't think you can have a waiver. I think they would have to sign, you know, saying, you know, I accompanied him, or sign on the back of the home inspection report or something. Just so we have a, you know, an affidavit to someone that did it, or, you know, an attest to someone that did accompany them.
I know that you discussed the length. Is it possible that this could be revisited after a year, meaning that if, you know, he's fully compliant within a year, he's done this, that's required, that maybe then the remainder of the probationary period be lifted at that point?
I think we're open to revisiting it in a year. I don't think we're going to make any guarantees that anything would change, but yes, can you bring it back for the board's review? Absolutely. So I'm hearing we have three potential options. I mean, one is to keep the consent that was already offered. The second one is to modify it with a disclosure to the sellers about what's happened and asking them to understand those issues. The third one would be a voluntary surrender. So do you have a preference between those three? Because I really think that's as far as the board is willing to go.
I don't know if it's something I can table now or that I can discuss with my client, but we were told that that consent order, which is basically what was provided, because, yeah, the revocation, the permanent revocation is not something that we would want, and probably not the agreement, you know, from a seller or a waiver. We were told that we had until September 28th to make the decision. That was in the last letter from the investigator.
Well, so we keep the consent agreement.
Keep it the way it
remains
is.
Remains proposed.
Right.
Yes. Waiting for them to sign.
Offer it. Not signed within, you know, a certain amount of time. It goes to formal hearing.
It's been offered and we're in that time.
Yes.
Right.
So.
Yes.
So.
But do we also want to authorize the board to negotiate an alternate consent along the lines of what we discussed over the next 30 days? Or do you just want to keep it as
no,
is?
No, because then, you know, it could be, well, I'm not signing that one, it's another one, so we're going another 30 days and then come in, oh, I don't like the language of this one.
Well, I think that we would move to send it to hearing on September 28th if we don't have a signed consent. And it could be this, or it could be the other version. My concern, Jason, is that, you know, then they really decide they wanted the other one and they're willing to sign, and because we only offer this one, we can't offer the other one, and we end up going to hearing without having to.
I mean, I suppose I could rewrite it that it's an either or.
Right.
You know, that you either need to have exactly the way it's written or a signed affidavit from the seller stating that they are aware of the, you know, aware
what's
of what
that,
it was.
What's that, I mean, don't make it an affidavit.
Yeah. Well, just an attest.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
who's going to write that?
Well, staff will.
Staff will.
Yeah.
But then, are we going to have to wait a whole other month until the next board meeting to approve the new consent agreement?
No, I think what we're saying is, you know, if because we already discussed what the consent would be, is if it's not signed by September 28th, then we'll go to hearing. And if it is, we'll approve it.
And when is our next meeting?
September 25th.
Yep. So we would have time to review it? Review any counters?
My intent is that this wouldn't come back on the agenda. Is that they either sign this as is, or revised with the disclosure to the sellers, or just go to hearing, because I don't know that there's much more to discuss here. Mr. Donald?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the next meeting is September 25th. Can I just shorten the time from the 28th to the 25th and have it set for the September 25th meeting to either accept a consent or the board votes the matter completely and secure?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. All right. So let me make sure I understand what we're saying, and then if somebody's willing to make a motion, that would be fine, is that we offer the, or keep the current consent on the table that was previously offered, or that we offer, or that they negotiate with staff an alternative version of the consent that changes the requirement for someone to accompany him to instead be a disclosure to the sellers or the seller's agent of what's happened. And if they sign, they need to sign one of those two agreements by September 25th, or we will move forward to hearing. Is that what we're saying? And is there a motion to that effect or further discussion?
So moved.
Okay. You have a motion?
So is it to offer two separate consent agreements or an either or in one consent agreement?
Two separate consent agreements, either the one that's been offered or a different one that would have the disclosure.
That changes that last part of it.
Okay.
Mr. Parlin, do you have any?
Would it be the board's position, Mr. Chair, in regards to option number two, that a copy of the consent agreement serve as the notice that you talked about?
I don't know that yet. I think we can leave that to staff, and we can talk about it afterwards, but the intent would be just a disclosure to the sellers.
So you want staff to write that disclosure?
Yes.
Okay.
I think. I mean, it's your motion, Andy.
Well, as I understand it, option two is going to require notice to the seller, the seller's agent, and it spells out what the notice is supposed to require. I think we can leave it up to
staff. Can you're thinking?
I think we can leave it up to respondent to do his own disclosure, as long as it complies with what we're telling him.
Okay. Well, so he can draft the disclosure, but subject to approval by the board.
That's fine.
Sounds good.
And Mr. Chair, just to restate to make sure I fully understand the board's position. The board is offering the initial consent agreement in the event the respondent chooses not to accept that consent agreement. The only counter that the board is willing to consider at this moment would be for a consent agreement that would include notice to the seller, the seller's agent. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes.
Yes. So we have a motion, and I'll second the motion.
Let me bring up one more thing.
Okay.
So, I mean, the reason I ask if it's an either or, so you have option A and you have an option B with two consent agreements. So if they pick the option A, they have to do all the inspections under option A. If they pick option B, they have to do all the inspections under option B. But if you combined them both and said it was an A or B, on an individual basis for the next 5 years, they could choose either have the realtor there or have the seller sign off. You see what I'm saying? You could have A or B. He has to do one of them, but he'd have the choice on each individual inspection what path to take.
Have we ever issued dual discipline ever in the history of this board?
We should probably expand B to cover that. If at all possible.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Sir Donald.
From a legal standpoint, that actually would not be as difficult to do as it may sound at first, because it could be taken care of under Section D of the consent under third-party observer by simply adding in that the third-party observer shall be either what it presently is, or there shall be notice to the seller and seller's agent of the basis for the current action and the discipline. and the third-party observer would be either a seller or seller's agent, or it would be a waiver by them.
Okay.
So it just kind of lumps everything into one, into one thing. I think the way he stated it makes sense.
Okay. Okay. Do we need to make motions to that, or I mean, is this case that even needs a motion? We haven't consent. The only motion I think we need to make is that if we don't have an agreement by September 25th, we'll move it forward to hearing. Isn't that correct?
Well, we have to make a motion to modify what we've already done.
All right. Go ahead, Jason.
Do we have something on the floor?
Well, we do.
Oh, yeah, we do have a motion on the floor. So, Andy, are you willing to modify your motion?
I'm willing to modify my motion to revise the pending consent agreement to change the, to add to the third-party observer during probation to say, or provide notice to the seller or seller's agent of this pending, or of this complaint, and give the seller or seller's agent the opportunity to either observe the inspection or waive the right to observe the inspection.
Okay, and I'm modifying my second to match what he said. Okay, so we have a motion to second. Any additional discussion?
I have one question.
We're changing it to the 25th.
25th of September, yep, that was part of the original motion.
And the option to voluntarily surrender always remains on the table.
Okay. Clear spot, right? Okay. Ready to vote?
Yep.
All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Fair enough. Okay.
Which one is it?
Yes, sir.
7C is available if you want to.
Okay. Is the guy who, is he here in person?
He's here in person,
okay. Okay. Okay, we're going to move to item 7C. Mr. Stone traveling a fairly long distance, so I'm going to accommodate him. Agenda item 7C, David Stone. This is an application for a home inspector certification. So the issue here is that Mr. Stone is trying to apply for registration using 100 inspections that he did under a rule that was in place at the time that he applied. The new rule requires 30 parallel inspections. So, Rob, is there anything you want to preface things with?
And correct me if I'm wrong, with the 100 inspections that he submitted, you've never been a licensed
No, I've not done any state.
So that's why it's before you guys, is because the 100 inspections, we just sent it to you for guidance, and so Mr. Stone is here to explain his side.
What's 30 parallel?
That's where you go out with someone else.
It's like the training program equivalent for home inspectors.
So that's the standard way to get registered. So you do 30 inspections with someone else.
Right.
There used to be a rule up until early August of this month where you could get registered an alternative path to do 100 home inspections. And here's what it says. It's R430-247A6. It's an applicant who has lawfully conducted home inspections as part of a business shall provide evidence of successful completion of 100 home inspections that meet the standards reference in R430-301-01 on the form provided by the board shall meet all the requirements of this section. So that talks about doing the inspections lawfully and meeting the standards that we have in another one of our rules. That rules include the standards of professional practice for home inspection.
Okay, I got a question. How can you lawfully do 100 home inspections if you're not a registered home inspector?
Exactly.
Right, I think what the intent is that they might not be a home inspection, but they cover the same items and things that you would observe in a home inspection.
But did he do these home inspections and write home inspection reports?
Right.
Well, if that's the case, that would be 100 violations of the Practice Act to practice as a home inspector without being licensed. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That was a rule? That's what it was before?
Well, if you came from another state and you had done 100 home inspections in another state that were comparable to here, you wouldn't have to do 30 parallels.
Right, but that would be 100 lawful home inspections in another state.
Right.
That might not have the same requirements we do, but we could check on what their requirements are.
Well, these aren't in another state.
No.
Like Havasu, Yuma.
So, I mean, in our state, a lawful home inspection is by a certified home inspector. I don't quite see how this, I mean, I see this as more of a 100 violations of the Practice Act doing home inspections without being licensed. I think this was in there from when the home inspection first started to basically grandfather in people before the home inspections were certified, so that the first, I mean, because when they first started certifying home inspectors, who are you going to do a parallel with? Because no one was licensed. So what they did is, you know, people that had done it for many years and had 100, at that point in time got grandfathered in as you are now certified. This went away because it no longer applies, because you don't have anybody that's been doing that. Now, if the dates on his home inspection were, I don't know, whenever before we started certifying home inspectors, you know, 15 years ago or whatever, then okay, that'd be a grandfather in, but this doesn't apply in this case.
Yeah, Mr. Moore, do you have anything you want to say? I say you want to speak. Or Mr. Stone, sorry.
I do, and this has been going back and forth for a while in trying to submit this, and what reads doesn't say what the intent of the law. The intent was to grandfather in, it doesn't say that in the published law. And also in applying, they don't accept any out-of-state inspections whatsoever. To this day, when I tried and said, well, can I get my inspections done in California? Absolutely not. It's a parallel in the state of Arizona only. The problem with that is I live in a rural community. It took me 4.5 hours to drive here this morning. And to do these parallels, the giant financial burden, which isn't helping the community and the people that need to be protected in my neighborhood, we've got the inspections I do, I'm a certified mold inspector, I'm a certified asbestos inspector and removal. I'm a general contractor. I do water restoration and water mitigation, and I'm a certified subrogation expert for insurance companies. So I do inspections for insurance companies looking for defects and defaults that cause losses. On top of that, with my general contracting and home inspections and very vast knowledge of that, I feel I'm more than qualified in this, and the intent of that, the intent isn't what's written, I guess, is what I'm saying. So,
yeah. Are you a licensed general contractor?
I am, sir. Have been since 1990 in Arizona.
And reside in Lake Havasu City?
I reside in Lake Havasu City. So in trying to do the parallels and follow this rule, it's $225 to do a parallel, is what I'm told, that I'm given. I have to do that 30 times. I have to drive a 9-hour round trip, pay for a hotel, and pay for food. That can be anywhere from a $15,000 to $20,000 problem for me that I can't recover doing those inspections if they don't pay enough to
do the parallels in Lake Havasu City.
I cannot do parallels in Lake Havasu City. I've tried everybody there. I've been told absolutely not. Why would we train the competition? I've been told, I did get one guy to agree to it, and he was with a franchise. I got a call from a franchise in Florida that said, if that employee does that, we're firing him. You can't go do parallels with him. So it's kind of like where I am, you know, here you have a big city. You have a lot of inspectors that, you know, I don't care if they step on toes to make some extra money. But up there, it's a very few inspectors that do care about somebody coming into their turf. So I go in on insurance jobs, you know, with water leaks, and I walk up and go, wow, you know, this roof should have, you know, when did you buy this house? A month ago. A month ago, did you have it inspected? Absolutely. Well, this roof is crazy. You know, the vents on the roof clearly aren't suited. They're misinstalled. They're for the wrong application. That's what caused the leak.
Mr. Stone, one question. You mentioned you do inspections of mold and other stuff. You're a general contractor. Do you typically inspect stuff and then do repairs when necessary?
No, not if I'm inspecting it. I can't do the repairs if I'm doing the inspection.
Okay.
So it's just a report to the insurance company. And if I'm doing a mold certification, I can't work on the job. If I'm doing asbestos testing, I can't work on the job. So it's looking for the problems, and you know, somebody else has to take care of it that way.
It seems to be a case to me of, you know, governor's restricting practice.
Well, that
may, person trying to make a living.
That may very well be, but that's something to take to the legislature. The law is written the way the law is written.
Yeah.
Lawfully conducted home inspections, and the law states you have to be a licensed home inspector. I mean, I don't know, Mr. Donald, do you see this any other way?
So he's applying, talking about his application.
I would be more than happy to provide legal advice to the board. I can discuss some things in open session, or if the board would like to go to executive session for specific legal advice, we could do that as well.
Okay.
Do you want to go to
an executive session for legal advice?
Okay.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to go to legal advice in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Mr. Stone, we'll retake your case in a few minutes after we hear from the AG. So if you can step away, please. Thank you.
Thanks.
Go back in session for the Board of Technical Registration. We're at this point on item 7C. for Mr. Stone. Does anybody on the board have any additional discussion? I mean, I've got a couple things I'd like to bring up. But.
Well, I'd just like to say that according to Mr. Stone, it seems like he's being a little bit shunned by the community, and that doesn't sit well with me that the community would be able to do that to him. So I'd just like to make that statement.
Okay. When I go through the statute, the rule, I mean, talks about lawfully conducting home inspections. And home inspections are very clearly defined in our rules and statutes. It also requires that you comply with the standards of professional practice for home inspections from 2002. So I have a hard time, just because you provided me a list of 100 addresses, to understand that the work you did at each one of those 100 houses was a full home inspection as opposed to a mold review or a, you know, water damage assessment or an insurance assessment for a specific issue, because each home inspection has to include an assessment of the entire home. And I can't get there from 100 addresses. So if you have the reports that you prepare for those 100 homes and they are equivalent to what a home inspection is, I could get there, but without those, I think it's a hard. I mean, if it had been an official home inspection in another state, I think it would be much easier to compare standards. But what you're asking us to do is to take something that you did it for an entirely different purpose and say it's the same as a home inspection. So I need to see it and know that it does comply with what a home inspection would do.
Okay, and while I'm going through this process, reading the statute says I need to provide those 100 on a provided form by the board. The board refuses to provide me that form. They said it doesn't exist, and we don't accept 100 inspections whatsoever. That's what I'm faced with. That's why I submitted those addresses. If I was given the proper form that the law states, I would have followed those directions.
I don't have an issue with the form that you provided. My issue is that your work was not a home inspection if we define a home inspection. So I need to verify that your work was equivalent to home inspection. To do that, I want to see your inspection reports.
Okay.
Dr. Angel, I don't even think you can.
You don't even think you can do
that?
Okay.
Because it says a lawfully conducted home inspection. It's written right there. And to do a lawfully conducted home inspection, you have to be a licensed home inspector.
Right.
I really don't see any other way around it, the way the law is written. Agree, disagree, whatever. I mean, we didn't write the law. We're just following the law. So, you know, if this is an issue that needs to be brought up, you know, to the legislation or someone else, that's someone else. But the way it's written today is the way it's written today, and I don't see any wiggle room in it at all to even, you know, even if he provided 100 home inspections, they weren't done lawfully by a licensed home inspector. We kind of have a, you know, circle logic here. You know, we're trying to approve a home inspector report done by a non-home inspector to verify that he's qualified to be a home inspector. He's self-certifying himself. That's the point of the parallels. So that you go out there with a licensed person so they can know and verify that you know what you're doing and writing the proper reports and everything else. I mean, you know, you can't just self-certify yourself.
Unfortunately, that's a difficult situation that he's in because, you know, he's in a rural community.
And that very well may be. But the law doesn't say anything about that.
There are a lot of communities.
If you live in a small community that you can't do it. There are home inspectors all over the state. You know, they're up in Prescott, they're in Flagstaff, they're in, you know, small areas.
There's a lot of towns that are smaller than Lake Havasu in the state.
So, you know, that, and if there was something written in the law that said if you were in a, you know, smaller community of a county less than so-and-so or whatever, you know, I think we'd have some leeway. The way it is, I don't think we have any.
So do you want to give him leave to send in reports on these 100 inspections?
I think Mr. Madison has me convinced that, no, if those reports are identical to a home inspection, then he should have done them under home inspection certification.
And that brings up the other issue. Now we have all these, if they are home inspections that were done by a non-registered home inspector. Now, if they're mold or water damage or something like that, then that doesn't apply. So,
are they? What's your opinion of your 100 home inspections?
I've been doing this for almost 30 years. I've done construction inspections, insurance inspections. I've done them all. I can promise anybody want to go out in the field with me, I can show that I am qualified to do a home inspection. The issue is, the 30 parallels, and they keep jumping around, you know, changing the rules, I guess, because they don't want to allow this. And I'm just trying to find another suitable solution to the problem, because the way I interpret the 100 and his, I did not break the law committing any inspections that I did. Were they his definition of a lawful home inspection? They don't qualify to him, but I didn't break any laws doing home inspections. I followed the rules of whatever it was I was doing it for, and I'm more than qualified. And this 30 parallel is a giant financial burden for me to try to comply with, and there should be a second way, an alternative way, to get to this home inspector's certification. And there is one, but they're not allowing it.
Unfortunately, I mean, that's not our purview.
Pardon me?
That's not our purview. Our purview, I mean, our responsibility is to interpret or to enforce the laws and statutes that we have, the statute and rules we have. We can't provide an alternate path that doesn't exist, as reasonable as it might be.
Well,
so that's
the
question.
The 100 inspection. So what would you like for me to comply with that 100 inspection?
I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I still think you can.
Yeah, because home inspections are legally defined in our rules and statutes, and you could not have done this legally.
Yeah, it's not your definition versus Mr. Madison's. It's how they're defined in our.
So can a home inspector from another state still come into Arizona, or does he have to do 30 parallels?
If a home inspector from another state comes into Arizona and applies right now, I understand this to be 30 parallels. If a home inspector from another state had come in July and had 100 home inspections from their state, that would count.
And we are looking at licensure by endorsement coming up, but it's not in effect yet.
And it would require that person to be a licensed home inspector and endorsed.
Right.
Okay. Is there any more discussion on this item?
Is there any way to waive or reduce the number of parallel inspections? 30 is
nope.
The number.
It's written right in the law. Yeah. 30 is it.
Let's make it 5.
Well, it is going on the agenda for the Home Inspection Rules and Standards Committee to look at September 12th. Is 30 an appropriate number? But
that's what the statute is right now.
That's what the rule is now.
They have discussed it in the past, and it's been the Home Inspection Committee's position that people need a substantive amount of experience before they go out on their own. So they have discussed 30, but they'll reevaluate it.
Mr. Stone, did you have anything else you want to say to the board?
I did. Up until this rule change in the last session, I believe it was that you had, or a couple ago, you know, it was, I guess, a process allowed for an inspector who's only had a license for a day to do parallels. And so somebody that was in a different trade whatsoever that went through the process and became an inspector, who clearly doesn't have the experience that I have, is basically holding my license in his hand and doing parallels. And that's how it's been all the way up until a month or two ago.
Mr. Stone, we're talking about your specific case and how the rules apply to that case. I understand. I mean, I sympathize with a lot of what you're saying, but we can't deal with that. Okay, is there any more discussion, or does anyone want to make a motion on this case?
I don't know. Is this even a case that we have? Is there action that needs taken by the board on this?
To approve or to deny his application.
It's an approve or deny license?
No, we're not really doing that.
You would maybe extend the application time frame to allow the applicant to submit the 30 parallels to complete the application, because really I think what you've done today is say that his 100 inspection log isn't equivalent to 100 home inspections, right?
Right, because we don't know what it was.
Well, how have those been evaluated? How have the 100, and if we do evaluate them, do we somehow incriminate the applicant by saying their home inspections, which I don't want to do that.
If you can't accept them because they don't meet the law, there's no point in going down that road.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So giving him leave to obtain the 30 parallels, keep the application open until he can complete it with 30 parallels
within a certain period of time.
When's his application closure date right now?
The time he applied, you could extend it up to a year. So that old law would apply. That's when he applied.
So
the application was opened on July 20th. So if we could extend it to
July of 2019.
Yeah. Let's do that.
To obtain the 30 parallels? For the purpose of obtaining the 30 parallels?
Right. So I'll move. Extend time frame for the application for 1 year from when he originally applied in order to obtain the 30 parallels required by the rules and statutes.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Let's vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Mr. Stone, so I think the board has determined that you do need to get a 30 parallel, but your application will stay open until July of 2019.
All right.
Thank you. Okay, next we have the 6E cases, and I know several of them are related cases. Mr. Parlin and Mr. Donnell, is it okay to take some of them? I mean, the issue on like 6E1 through 6E4 is the same, I believe. Can we take them together, or do we have to take them individually?
So what are we doing?
6E1.
So
is that right? No. This is different. E1?
It's Mr. Poos.
Yeah. Yeah, the board and then same time they all have the same person issue.
Okay. So we will be talking about agenda items, it's 6E1, 6E2, 6E3, and 6E4. P18066, Ronnie Dorsey. P18067, Jimmy Crum. P18068, Michael Fondren. P18069, Frank Cable, all RLSs. So, I think what's come up, I mean, four individual complaints were filed against those four surveyors, but the issue is more the practice of doing ADOT right-of-way studies and recording those, or filing those with ADOT as opposed to recording at the county recorder's office. And, you know, the issue that's been brought up both by the alleger and the respondents is the interpretation of statute 33-105. And I don't know if the board doesn't have it. I'll read it fairly quickly, but it's 33-105 is recording of certain land surveys. And a land surveyor shall file a record of a land survey not later than 90 days after its completion with the county recorder of the county where the land is located. If such a survey establishes points or lines relating to land boundaries or property lines, disclosing, one, a material discrepancy, in whole and part, that do not appear on any map or record previously recorded or filed with the county recorder, county engineer, highway division of the Department of Transportation, or the U.S. BLM. And then it goes on. So the question is, does every survey done with ADOT need to be recorded with the county recorders, or is it sufficient to file it with ADOT? And I don't know, do we want to hear, does anybody want to speak to the board before we get into the discussion?
Is there a state exemption?
Yes, please, come on up and please state your name for the board.
I'm Jim Volker, so I'd be a ledger in this case, for these cases. My concern arises from the observation that I see very few surveys performed by ADOT or by surveyors contracted with ADOT recorded at the county recording office. And I believe the 33-105 is very clear. It says just what you read, but at the end of the statement that says with the county recorder where the land is located, if such survey, at that point we are done. They're supposed to be recorded at the county. Everything that follows that is a condition that might trigger the recording with that county recorder. And those surveys are not being recorded with the county recorder.
Okay.
There's a contention that if they're available in the state ADOT's office or the BLM, that those are public records. Those are not public records. Title companies only search through county records. So the public can never find these if they don't know to go to the ADOT engineer's office or the BLM office. The statute says they need to be recorded at the county recorder's office.
Okay.
And that's really all.
An example of what you're talking about, like the new South Mountain Freeway over in Ahwatukee, that being surveyed. Is that an example?
Any survey where there's any of these items that are either in this statute or in the minimum standards that would trigger me as a surveyor not working for ADOT to have to report it down. It just seems like the rule not being applied equally to all registries.
And do we have anybody who wants to speak on the respondent side? Or sorry, Mr. Madison. I mean, let's hear from both.
I was just going to ask Mr. Bruce. So would the issue with something like this be if he was doing a survey adjacent to an ADOT tract or something that he would not be able to find the information in the county recorder's office?
I think that's his concern. Okay. I think that's what he's trying to
do. That's kind of what I got, too. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify.
Gentlemen, would you please state your name for the board?
I'm Jim Kroon.
Mike Fondren.
Thank you.
I think it comes down to interpretation of statute. Because in Title 13, Article 1, Section 33-105, it says material discrepancy based on the accuracy requirements of the current survey which, in whole or in part, does not appear on any map or record previously recorded or filed with the county recorder, county engineer, highway division of the Department of Public, or highway division of the Department of Transportation, or the United States Bureau of Land Management. So So the Highway ADOT, being the Highway Division of the Department of Transportation, is built into the statute, is the way I interpret it.
Okay.
Well, I guess first of all, I'll state that, you know, obviously we all acted in good faith of what we believe was interpretation and provided us with information from previous board members in this. It was, you know, Mr. Tuttle, when he was on this, you know, our intent is never to circumvent any of the rules, especially when you're considering, you know, a couple of people that are involved in this, involved in the rulemaking. There are several aspects of this. I, you know, Jim and I have gone over this stuff. Obviously, the statute is that way. I can tell you that in conversations with the county, Maricopa County DOT surveyor, his opinion is that it's covered like this. ADOT's opinion is that that's where it operating the way we should be. Again, previous members of the board believe that. So, I mean, if you want to reinterpret the statute or change it or supply an interpretation, that's a different issue. But up until now, the other thing is we're talking about literally thousands of surveys that some are recorded, some are not. It, generally with ADOT, I don't have the experience that Jim has with the thing, but if we do a disposal survey, a lot of times those are recorded because they go out into the public. That property is going to go off. And then some of those I know that have been recorded over the time. The general highway surveys that we do for ADOT right-of-way, they are on file and readily accessible. They are a public document. I disagree with with Mr. Walker's statement that title companies don't only review what's in the county. I can show you proof of a title company report that I have sitting on my desk right now that shows that they have unrecorded easements referenced through bill of sale. So they obviously look at more than just the county record. So that's not really an accurate statement, in my opinion.
The ADOT surveys are also a matter of public. They've got a website that right. Anybody can go at, access, and download any of the surveys. So it's not inconvenient for anybody to go get those if they want.
And something else I would add, that ADOT's standards for surveys match or exceed the minimum standards as they are. The accessibility of those documents would be greatly hindered because we could not record any of the surveys that we have as they are per the ADOT standards with Maricopa County. Maricopa County employs drafting standards in their recordation requirements that are not part of statute, but they enforce them, and every map that we do for ADOT pretty much by their drafting standards would not even be recordable in Maricopa County. Not the same in some other counties, but in Maricopa County, it is a big issue. Because of line types, patching patterns, drafting standards, like I said, that are enforced by Maricopa County that are not even mentioned in the statute. So there's that issue too. So, and those drafting standards are important to ADOT because line types of them is a very particular thing. I mean, on our surveys, we show areas where you cannot have access to. Specific things like that that are very important to those right-of-way surveys that we would have to strip from our surveys if we filed them with Maricopa County at least. So, and they're also more obtainable. Most counties are not as accessible with the recorded documents as Maricopa County is. Mojave is pretty accessible. Pinal is pretty accessible. But there are several rural counties where you can't even hardly get the records that are recorded. So,
thank you. Mr. Fulkers, is there anything else you want to say that's new before we start board discussion?
A short email.
Sure.
This is from me to Marsha Brown, who is the chief title officer for Pioneer Title Agency. They're the largest title company, I think, probably in the northern five counties. I'm not sure if they're down here or not. But I asked her, Marsha, can you tell me if title companies consider anything other than county recorder's records to be public records? This would include State Land Department, Arizona Department of Transportation, or U.S. Bureau of Land Management Records. And her response is, no, we only consider documents recorded with the county recorder as public records. I know ADOT would like us to believe otherwise, but he loses.
Thank you. So is there somebody else involved in the case that had something to say? I saw a hand in the back. Yes, sir.
I'm Brian Abel.
Mr. Abel?
Again, just because of private title company doesn't enter into that research, if you're trying to tell me the GLO and BLM records are not public records, as well as state land easements, that's wrong. Private title companies don't get to define what is public records.
Okay.
When you do a survey, you, as a surveyor, you're not going back to the original GLO and GLO Americans. You're not doing due diligence whether or not it's in a quiet title.
Are you addressing the board or Mr. Folkers?
All.
Thank you.
The board. Thank you. Okay. I think let's start. We might have questions for everybody, but I think it would do good to start some of the discussion.
Well, I'll start, and we read through the statute in question, and the statute in question identifies the county engineer and the highway division and the Bureau of Land Management. I won't speak for the Bureau of Land Management because they're a federal agency, and I think they're kind of outside of this. But of the two that are identified in this statute, I find that they also have a statutory requirement for their own records keeping. So much so that ADOT, under 28442, has something that says records and evidence. This is under ADOT's. A certified duplicate is deemed an original for all purposes and is admissible in evidence without further foundation in all courts or administrative agencies. So there's something in ADOT's laws and rules that say that, or at least in my opinion, that's pretty much public
record,
publicly accessible. It's admissible in court. I'm going to be able to get it. The director shall adopt a seal to use to authenticate records and copies of records required to be made and kept by the department. So there's ADOT. Now there's a whole bunch. There's a big section under transportation that pertains to ADOT's record keeping. I think the long story short is I know that I can go to the internet and find the plans for ADOT, the surveys, which are, they're not the same as deeds and mortgages, where we go to the recorders to get deeds and mortgages. So the other party in the statute in question is the county engineer, and the county engineer under 11562 says a county engineer shall be custodian of the records and property of the county related to surveying, engineering, and road construction. So as a surveyor, when I read that, I think this is notice to me as a surveyor that I need to go to the county engineer and find out what he has pertaining to my property. So I don't think there's a public notice issue here at all. I also think that the deposition of the records with ADOT is an equivalent of recording with the recorder's office, where I personally see it as the recorder's office is the catch-all for all the surveys we don't do that might not be publicly demonstrated somewhere else. So saying all that, I'm just going to go ahead and move that we dismiss all of these cases.
Second. Okay. We have a motion and a second. I'd like to add from my end, I mean, as a personal preference, I would really love it if all the surveys were recorded with the county recorder's office. It's a lot easier to find than going to state land and doing all the other things that we end up having to do. But reading the statute, I concur with Mr. Foos, because what I see is that you need to, and I think Mr. Folker started reading the statute, mentioned that, you know, stopped halfway through the first paragraph and said, if such boundary establishes da-da-da, he read as if it was a point or a period, and it's not. I read it that you need to file a record of survey with the recorder's office, with the county recorder, if you have a discrepancy with something that's previously recorded or filed with ADOT or others. So when you complete a project and you file that survey with ADOT, you already met that unless, so that you don't have to record with the county recorder, because unless, I mean, you only record if it's different from what's recorded at ADOT or filed with ADOT or the county engineer. So I think that part's already met, and I don't see why you would need to re-record.
Because it costs money?
To what? It costs money to record with a county recorder.
It does?
Yes, not with ADOT.
It's a burden to the recorders as well, for them to house maps. I mean, they actually keep these maps forever. That's their obligation. So they have to find a place to put these. So the duplication is is a burden to the recorder. I know this because I work with my county recorder and our assessor with our map keeping, and it really is a big burden when they're consumed with everything that the recorder records. Now, that's not our issue here. Our issue here is something different, but I'm saying that as information to kind of explain why it might be a concern not to duplicate the public records, because it's just more and more and more and more. So they physically keep Mylar copies forever. So, you know, that's a strong consideration there.
Let me hear once more from the alleger and the respondents, but please only if it's new stuff and keep it brief, because we got a lot of items still on the agenda.
Okay.
Mr. Volker.
Then are we saying that I am allowed to report my surveys with ADOT?
If ADOT will accept it, I think that's an ADOT question, but this says that you record with the county recorder if there's a discrepancy with an ADOT survey or BLN survey, or so that's the way I read the statute. Mr. Crum, did you have?
Yeah, just real quick. Normally surveys, they go over years and they get revised over a period of time, and if we had to record a 100-page set, then make a revision, now we're going to have to re-record another 100-page set. That's one of the reasons it's kept at ADOT, is because their process and updating those revisions is seamless.
Thank you. Yes, sir, in the back, would you please state your name?
Yes, Stanley Miller. I'm also a registered land surveyor. I work with the ADOT right-of-way group. I just wanted to add two things just for the board's consideration. One is that we work very closely with the ADOT Titles Department, and they have stated that they're allowed to electronically record for pretty much every county now. And some of the things they record may have exhibits, which many times are like a full size reduced 8.5 by 11. All the counties have accepted that if they put a statement there that original is on file with ADOT, all the counties are good with that, which again reinforces that even the county recorders are recognizing ADOT records as also being public records. The second thing is, for what it's worth, one of the assistant attorney generals that does represent ADOT is also of the opinion that the statute is very clear that ADOT is equivalent in essence to the county recorders.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
I would agree with that statement, the way that was put. There is, when I look through the statutes, they are very lengthy and very detailed, similar to the recorder. So the legislature recognized this.
I just have a question. I think this is something we should record as a policy statement. So once you're finished with your vote on these four cases, would you consider maybe forwarding this to LNR to draft a formal policy statement on this?
I would.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know what the rest of the board's decision is, but I think that's a great idea. Yes, sir.
In response to Melissa's statement on that, I agree with her 100%. This conversation is not new. Mr. Falker is bringing this up now. This conversation has gone on as long as I was on the board of APLS for 16 years. On again, off again type of thing. You've got surveyors trying to interpret the law, which is not a good thing sometimes. So a policy statement can maybe help clarify that, so that in all fairness to Jim and to other surveyors, that when the question comes up again, they can readily find that information, just like what we're talking about here, so that we don't waste the board's time again.
Thank you. Is there any more discussion from board members on this item? Okay, we have a motion and a second to dismiss items 6E1 through 6E4 and to forward the issue to staff to evaluate a policy statement to LNR for a policy statement on this, right?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, all in favor of the motion?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, John.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Folkers, for bringing it up.
Yeah.
does that a lot, but I mean, we needed the policy statement. We needed him to do that.
Mr. Marley, come on in.
Well, well, well.
Look who's here.
Let's show us up a time for lunch.
Timing is everything.
Oh, wait, I'm going to have to clean up now.
Yeah.
I think that's all yours, by the way.
Nice.
Cupcakes are horrible. Stay away from them.
Okay.
Okay.
Also horrible. Stay away.
Did you hear what he said? What did he say? They're horrible?
Yeah.
That's because
I'm
close.
Oh, oh. All right.
Boy, look who caught up.
We ready to move on?
Yeah. I'll wrap it.
Okay, we have three cases that are related. I think we ought to hear them individually unless somebody thinks they should be heard altogether, at least to start with, and maybe after we discuss what the merits of the first case are, we can decide to combine them. But agenda item 6E5, P18001. Respondent's name is John Willett, civil engineer, and this is in reference to a Surprise Legacy Charter School expansion in Surprise, Arizona.
You do recuse myself.
Thank you. Would you, Gilmore, Mr. Gilmore, would you?
Jack.
Chicken.
Jack.
You make sure to fill out a form.
I did. I gave it to
him. Oh, you already did that. Okay.
I was the only one on the board when he was on.
Hold on. Mr. Chairman, give me 1 second.
Yeah, take your time.
Yes, God.
No. What did I do?
You replaced John on the board. I said I'm the only guy that was still on. I'm still here.
And you'll still be here next time.
I'll still be here when you're getting replaced.
Yes.
So I have to recuse myself from the first one.
6E5?
6E5.
That's the one we're hearing right now. Thank you, Andy. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right, we still have a quorum. Okay, so 6E5, this is about the traffic study for a charter school and whether the respondent applied the technical knowledge and skill and protected the public. Alleger contends that the study either underreported, underestimated, or ignored some traffic issues, and respondent says that he did. And so is there anybody that wants to speak on the case here? Mr. Falk, if everybody would please identify themselves for the board.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Douglas Falk with Clark Hill here today representing CivTech and John Willett, who's a registrant in this matter.
Thank you.
Mr. Willett's with me today.
John Willett, and point of clarification, the PE number should be the number 226658. So 104445 is not.
That's the firm number for CivTech.
Okay. Thank you. Good clarification. Is the alleger present or wants to address the board?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Falker, Mr. Willett, is there anything you'd like to say to the board?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe we're here today on this one seeking guidance from the board on this matter. I've had great deal of cooperation and communication with Mr. Backer in the last 6 to 8 months since these three matters were presented to the board. My understanding is the board has received a completed assessment only on the second of the three complaints, which is P18002. On this one involving Mr. Willett, my understanding is the board has not been able to find anybody who can assess the allegations. Mr. Willett has responded very thoroughly and in detail to the allegations. He's provided all the work product, all the applicable standards, and I will note all of these projects on all three of these complaints were approved for development, permitted, and built in these communities. So, we have some concerns about why these complaints were filed against the registrants when it would appear that perhaps some in Surprise and
Goodyear
and Goodyear may have some other issues at play with the developers who built a series of charter schools. These all involve charter school projects. So we're asking that the matter be resolved some way, somehow. And if the board is not inclined to just dismiss it based on the response that Mr. Bullitt's made on his own behalf, then we would ask that some further direction be given. I won't presume to speak to Mr. Thacker, but every time I've inquired, I've been told that the package has been sent out to multiple registrants and nobody has been willing or able to do an assessment.
That is correct. We've gone through 21 P's, and they seem interested, and when they get it, they don't, and there seems to be a real problem with tying violations to predictions. So,
say that again, tying what?
Tying some violations to predictions.
So I think part of that is that, there's part of the traffic engineering world and the studies that are, you know, pretty straightforward and, you know, easily quantifiable, but there's other parts that are more judgment-based and are harder to, I think, do an assessment on. With that said, it's not like you can't do it. I think they're just more time-consuming to come to those broad conclusions, to do those assessments. And this is more a suggestion for the board, for Millis and Patty, is, I'm happy to do an assessment on one of these if we decide that we want to continue them, or I could have somebody else do it. But if we can't find people, we might want to start doing what some of the other boards are doing, and it's pay someone to do an assessment on it. If we can't find volunteers, we still need the assessments. We can't just bypass that because we don't find people, in general, you know, generally speaking.
I appreciate your comments. It was my understanding, and I apologize for coming back in late, but it was my understanding that we couldn't find assessors because of bias or conflict. It wasn't that they didn't want to. They felt that they couldn't. Is that not true?
Some other assessors would work with CivTech. CivTech's a very large company. They're out there. They're doing these traffic studies all over Arizona. So when you come into somebody who works traffic, one of our volunteers, they deal with CivTech. So that was conflict of interest.
Right.
Issues we had there. There was a bunch of issues that we ran into.
Mr. Donald and I talked about this case and the fact that the board prefers EACs and the decisions and recommendations that come out of those, but it isn't impossible for you as the sitting board, including you, to look at the evidence before you and determine what you can from it or ask for additional information yourselves.
The challenge is we have a 6,000-page agenda with 50 different cases, so for us to go in depth into an individual case, you're asking a lot of these guys who are going to have to stay on the board. I'm coming off soon. So.
Now, I would prefer we not pick Alejandro to do this, because then we lose your expertise on the board when the final decisions need to be made.
Right, and I think that's a big thing. I mean, that's why we do EACs and have evaluations, because all of us aren't well-versed in traffic flow studies. I know that you stop at a stoplight and you go when it's green and stop when it's red. I mean, I took one course back in college, but...
I noticed in the packet it was mentioned that it's extremely unfair to a respondent to come to an EAC without knowing what he's facing. And I've kind of always had that feeling in the back of my mind. So I think that's something important to really consider here when we move forward with that.
Yeah, so I think if we're struggling with assessments, let's figure out what to do, but I think we still need to do them, unless we have a clear reason why we don't need them, just separately from the merits of the case.
I just like that, and the assessment process that we have is pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
I've never ran into this problem without, and especially in the PE world. I mean, we've never had anybody turn away or ignore phone calls when it's time for the assessment to be due in that kind of world. So the assessment process that we're working on right now, BTR, usually always comes through for us. It's just this one we hit the wall on. And I apologize to Mr. Polk and CivTech and the board for that issue that we're having now.
So with that said, I did look through this case. And I think, again, the parts that you should always do in traffic engineering, you know, they did traffic counts to see how things were operating. They did, you know, observations of the school because this was an expansion of an existing school. They used the right software. They did the right analysis. I will say, you know, the right trip generation, all that other stuff. The part that's more difficult is when you start talking about trip distribution, and that's one of the subjects of the complaint. That's, you know, where are people coming from and going to when they access this school. That's more subject to judgment. So I will say I don't quite agree with the way the trip distribution was done, but that's neither here nor there because that's an agency responsibility. I mean, the agency should have said, if they disagreed with the trip distribution, they should have said, no, this is not, you know, we need to see substantiation as to why you're proposing this. A lot of agencies actually have checklists that you have to agree to before you start a traffic study that describes how you're going to do your trip distribution, how you're going to do trip generation, how you're going to do all those things. So I think it's the onus is on the agency, and if they don't like the study, they can reject it and deny a permit until, to their satisfaction, they're protecting the public. So I think to put it on the registrant, or then to put it on us on the board, I read where the agency said, well, it's not our responsibility to stop growth. Well, neither is it the board's. It's just to protect the public. So if they're not, they need to either, you know, deny the permit if they don't believe in what's being done, or take responsibility for it if they approve it. So I don't see a case.
That seems reasonable.
I found it very specious that they would say, well, you know, it's not up to us to stop growth. So it's like, oh, we approved this only because we don't want to stop growth. And it's like, well, if there was some really blatant hazard, you know, that was approved, and then they would stop it in a heartbeat, whether it stopped growth or not.
Well, that would
if you had a building that had
a requirement, yeah. I mean, it's not that you're stopping growth, it's you want growth that is done in a proper, reasonable, and safe manner, and they approved it, which to me implies that it, in their opinion at that time, it was safe and reasonable.
And again, I sympathize with them just because traffic is not something that you can just measure. Like you would, you know, do you have the deflection that you need to have on a beam? I mean, this is not as straightforward, but have procedures in place, you know, or have a process for, you know, third-party reviews or something else that can help avoid this. But I know they're under a lot of pressure to approve stuff, you know, because it's tax revenue and permit revenue, but they need to do their jobs.
So it sounds like there's a consensus among the
I think so, unless somebody else has a different opinion.
No, I would just add that the agency that I work for, we consider the price of the improvements, or if there's any improvements associated with the traffic design, we'll look at that and say, geez, can we maintain this? Is it something we want to maintain? You know, there's a lot of thought processes, so we do have the ability to control the final outcome. But more importantly, we control it after the project's done. So it becomes our responsibility, so to speak. So if something doesn't work, if there was, it just didn't work for no apparent reason or no ill will or bad doing, it just didn't work. Maybe a bunch of people moved to town and changed some dynamic there. The public has the ability to kind of erase the blackboard and start over, right? The agency does. So I'm not.
In this one,
I don't really see a lot of merit in this here.
This is part of a bigger project, and I think they're part of the agency's concern as well. If we start being too anti-growth, it might go somewhere else. Because there's improvements that are coming, but they're just later than the expansion of the school. If they really needed them, they should have asked for them now, you know, and asked for better substantiation. So, can somebody make a motion?
So you're making a motion to dismiss? I'll make a motion to dismiss.
Okay. I'll second.
P18001.
Okay. We have a motion to dismiss P18001 and a second. Any additional discussion? Okay, I will vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Do we want to take the other two cases? I guess if we're saying that this is the agency's responsibility, because these all involved approved traffic studies.
I would move that we consent item 6E6 and 6E7, cases number P18-002, P18-012, consent those and dismiss those cases.
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion to consent 6E6, 6E7, and dismiss both cases. Any discussion?
Is the case with Donna Cartier, she's the president of the firm, and she wasn't doing the work, but they're going after her as well.
Do you want to hear? She might be here.
Yes. Mr. Noel, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Donna Cartier with CITTEC here. If you go back through the three complaints, which read very similarly, they were all directed only at Ms. Cartier. They didn't even mention the three registrants who are properly identified by the board. Ms. Cartier did prepare the studies and seal the studies in P18-012, but otherwise these complaints just named her because it's her company. So that's her involvement in it, but she's been very heavily involved in the development of these responses and the information that's been provided on behalf of all of the registrants. With respect to P1802, Mr. Spadafino's complaint, you did get an assessment back on that with a recommendation for dismissal. We can answer questions about the other two, but it really is the same process, the same set of concerns that we have about the other two.
Does the board want to have any additional discussion? If not, we have a motion to consent and dismiss both cases and a second. So all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion's passed. Thank you.
And
thank
you do appreciate the time that you took to answer all these complaints individually and not just put a blanket statement like, we did nothing wrong. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
Considering in this case they had trouble finding EAC, I mean, you know, that
helped.
Thank you again. Thank you, Mr. Thank Ball, you. Good to see you. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Break was good.
You need a break?
Yeah. All right. Except Ed.
Yes. Except Ed, we just got here. Okay. How about we take a 10-minute break and reconvene at 11:40?
Yeah, except Ed. Ed has to sit
there. Yeah, I'll sit there.
Mr. Madison, please. All right. We're going to go back in session.
Yeah. Ask me to leave, please.
Okay, we're going to take up item 7B.
I thought we were doing F1.
We'll do that after.
Oh, okay.
Because I think F1 is calling in. 7B has been here.
7B.
The applicant's name is Jose Enriquez. Application for professional engineering registration. I think the background on this is Mr. Enriquez has passed both exams and has an education that's been deemed equivalent to the ABET degree. I think the bigger issue is that his experience is mostly abroad. Some of it is fairly old, and I think only one of the references is a graduate engineer. I could be mistaken in that, but That's why the case is up for consideration as to whether we want to grant license or not.
And we got an extra handout on this one.
He provided this resume at the end of last. We were wondering what he's been doing since 2003, since that was his last work experience he provided. And so the last page shows some extra experience.
Okay.
Mr. He's here to explain as well.
Yeah, Mr. Enriquez, is there anything you want to say to the board?
Yeah, see, basically, I got more than 10 years of engineering experience. Half of it is power engineering, electrical engineering, and half of it is basically software engineering. And after 2003, well, I was I'm aware of the public safety. That's the reason why we're having this session right now. I work for Amtrak, and I'm familiar with public safety. And also, I served the U.S. Air Force for 3 years. I was in OSAM, where I was able to assist engineers to build a temporary facilities. That's part of my engineering experience. And after 2003, I went back to school, got my associate degree in computer, and I was a consultant, basically on the side, defense consultant. And recently, I'm designing the computers, LED lighting system, and I just recently got my EIT 2 years ago and my professional. And that's got to show you, I've been studying to go back into the electrical engineering part of my career.
Thank you. So, I mean, I actually really like and appreciate that, one, you've been able to take and pass both of those exams after being out of school for a little bit. I think that says about, you know, says a lot about you and the effort you put in. So you have the exams, you have the education. The work experience, one of the concerns is that it's old, but I don't think our statutes say anything about that. It has to be recent. So you've demonstrated the right experience, and you show that you're current by passing the exams. I really think that all that is for us to decide is, can we grant you a license without having the, with having achieved your experience not being under the supervision of a professional engineer, some of it. And we do have that purview if we have a two-thirds vote on your application. So I would recommend that we grant license, as he's got good experience and has demonstrated he can pass the exams and has the knowledge.
I'll second the license.
I agree.
Okay.
He seconded it.
Okay.
So moved.
So a motion and a second for granting licensure. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, I think that's unanimous. So congratulations. Well done. Why don't we do 7A, since it's also another licensure case, fairly similar? Is that all right?
It's almost the exact same.
Yeah?
Almost the exact same. Mr. Guru's not here.
Okay.
But yeah, he has the exact same thing, passed the FB, the PD.
Yeah, in my mind, this is the same thing. He's demonstrated, he's not trying to backdoor in. He's passed the exam. He's got the experience. He was dinged for 4 hours of general education deficiency on the evaluation of credentials.
Yeah.
So just for Mr. Thomas, what I typically do with those is we say that if the degree is outside the United States, you get 30, for 30 credits, you get 12 months of experience. So if he was dinged for 4 hours of gen ed, I would typically just take that proportionally, which ends up being like 2 months. You lose 2 months of experience. So he gets 46, plus all the work experience and everything else. He still has the right amount of experience and satisfies all the requirements. So I don't see an issue, but pass on to Mr. Thomas. I think he's doing a good job in not sending these back because, you know, they met every requirement.
Right, yeah. He wanted to grab him. He just said he's a little timid to put his stamp on that one.
Yep, I think awesome. He did. He did it just right. So
appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, I move that we grant license to applicant 173001, because I'm not even going to try to pronounce that name.
Guru. He's a guru.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, motion passes. Okay, now we're going to go back to 6F1. Investigator is Orlean Lorne. David Roman, case number AL18003. This is a case where he was selling alarms without registration. We already settled a case, a related case against the installer Landon in May of 18. So I think we had offered a consent and we were offered a counter consent agreement?
Yes, correct.
Would you tell us, please, Ms. Lowe?
Yeah. So,
do you want me to call you?
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah. If he wants to, yes.
The
thank you. Let's do that first.
Yep.
He's not even on the board anymore.
He's pushing all the right buttons.
Joe LePerry.
Hello, Joe. This is Kurt Winter at the Arizona Board of Technical Registration. I'm going to get you talking to the board members here. Is that okay, sir?
It is. I'd like to patch in Mr. Roman. Would you like me to do that first, or should I wait until you patch me in with the board?
If you would like, you can give me his phone number, and then I can just call him as well.
Oh, okay. That'll be great. Bear with me one second.
Let him know that he's in front of the board right now.
Yeah, the board's already
just there. So you know, you are technically in front of the board right now. I apologize for not mentioning that.
Oh, well, that's okay. All right, his number is 860-712-3754. And, you know, your number is coming up as no caller ID, you know, information block. So would you mind if I just put you on hold for about 5 seconds so I could give him a call and give him a heads up that you're calling in, calling him as well so he knows to pick up the phone?
Yeah. I could put you on hold. Wait.
Why don't you let him contact him? Yeah. He's got a way to reach him. We can do that. Yeah. That's right, sir.
Oh, okay. So just bear with me one second. I'm just going to switch to another phone, and then you can get me. Hold on one second. All right. Okay. Thanks.
Sorry. It's just.
I'm going to put you on hold in order to call him and connect us, okay?
Thanks. Okay, appreciate it.
The Arizona Board of Technical Registration. I'm going to patch you in with the board members, but first I need to put you on hold in order to get your counsel on the phone as well, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Roman, are you there?
Yes.
Mr. Lepari, are you there?
I am, yes.
Okay. I think we're all here.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roman, Mr. Lepari. So we're going to start the discussion on agenda item 6F1, case AL18003. Respondent is Dave Roman. So the board has seen this case previously, I think last time in June. Ms. Laura. And so we're here to see what's happened since then. If you, Ms. Laura, if you want to explain to the board?
Yes, the board had offered a concession to Mr. Roman in June. Mr. Roman had not been has offered a counter-proposal, which is in front of you in your board packet. And if you have any questions regarding the counter-proposal, I can speak with the council.
Okay. Mr. Lepari, do you want to explain your counter-proposal?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Would you want to explain your consent proposal to the board, what you're proposing?
So this is Joe Lepari. You know, I had sent to Orlean a PDF of our proposed red lines provisions. So I think to a certain degree, you know, the changes that I'm proposing are self-explanatory, but I'm happy to go through them one by one. Or just give you a general overview of what we're proposing.
It's up to you.
Okay. Well, sure. I mean, I don't want to take up time if you know the PDF is in front of you. But in any event, I mean, we have our counter proposal switching over to the findings of fact. Our counter proposal would be an elimination of items 2, 3, 4, and 5, as well as 7, as well as 9 and 10, an elimination of one of the provisions under the conclusion of law subsection, and the end result, or the order, effectively being that a civil penalty is paid, the cost of investigation is paid, cost of compliance would be paid as well.
Okay, so your changes are related to the findings of fact?
That's correct. I mean, that's correct. I mean, within the findings of fact, we would be removing certain statements with regard to licensure and I guess, you know, what purports to be admissions from SSI.
So I'll start, Mr. Lepari, but anybody else can speak up. But I'm not inclined to modify the findings of fact. I mean, I think they're undisputed. He's not registered with the board and several other items that you're asking us to change. I actually, my notes from the June 2018 meeting was that the penalty was too light. So I'm the chairman of Alejandro Angel. In my mind, this is as generous consent agreement as I'm willing to offer. And if not, I'm willing to go to a formal hearing. So. Does anybody else have any thoughts on the suggested changes?
I would agree with your comments, Mr. Chairman.
Well, let me ask you this. When we initially put this counter proposal together and these revisions together, in some respects it was aspirational, and by that I mean this is best case scenario from our perspective, what the consent decree should look like. We're certainly not taking the position that we refuse to sign the consent decree unless and until it looks precisely like the counter proposal that we sent you. So, you know, I suppose my question is, would there be any willingness to discuss certain modifications or revisions to either the findings of fact or to the ultimate order?
Again, Mr. Lepari, just speaking for myself again, I actually think it's a pretty lenient agreement given what the offense was. So, from me personally, no.
Okay. Well.
And by the way, just to be clear, you don't have to sign the consent. If you decide to sign it, that's great. If you don't, I mean, we can go to hearing, and then we can decide what the appropriate, you know, discipline is.
Well, one thing, and this is Jason Madison, a member of the board. On these findings of fact that have been crossed off on your counterproposal, are there disagreements with these? Because they seem like they're just statements that are factual from the investigation that was completed. So I'm not quite sure why those are all being struck. Conclusions of law was just, you know, what the basis was on. And then you have the consent agreement, you know, sign the consent agreement without any admission of wrongdoing. Well, doesn't that just kind of nullify the consent agreement? That's kind of how I read through this.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of our primary concerns, and this is within the first recital section on page 2, and this is something else that we proposed a revision for, is respondent understands that this consent agreement or any part may be considered in any future disciplinary action by the board against him. So let me just ask you kind of a global question, because it may dictate our ultimate position on the remainder of the proposed consent decree. Would there be any willingness to accept that change so that this consent decree may not be used? I mean, specifically, the findings of fact wouldn't be used in the future.
Well, and would you explain why we would want to do that? I mean, if our intent is to protect the public, and that's our mission, why would we not consider previous discipline? I mean, is there something we don't know?
Well, look, I mean, this is a negotiation position that we're taking, certainly not suggesting that, there's something that you don't know. I'm just interested in coming to an agreement on the best document that's potentially agreeable to all parties.
So I guess I'll hear if there's any motions from the board to either modify the consent, reoffer the consent, or move to hearing directly. I don't know if there's any inclination from anybody.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I'm just wondering, is there another mechanism for potentially negotiating so that we could actually go line by line and potentially have a discussion about some of these items versus sort of an up vote or down vote? Initially that's sort of what we were envisioning, that we would provide proposed revisions and perhaps have a conversation where we could justify some of our revisions, and rather than simply an up or down vote on what we characterize as sort of an aspirational document from our perspective, we could actually maybe come to an agreement and find some middle ground here.
Mr. Lipari, I think we're not intending to work that way. We already offered a consent that we think has plenty of incentive for you to avoid going to hearing. Again, you don't have to sign it, but the stuff you're asking us to modify is a non-starter in my mind. We can't change the facts.
Okay,
we can't change those conclusions. So,
Well, that's all fine. How about this? We put this document together a while ago, and I think we indicated, and I'm not sure of the exact timeline, I think we indicated, at least several weeks ago, that we were interested in discussing proposed modifications. So, given the position that the board seems to be taking at this point, I'm wondering if we could have some additional time to determine exactly how we're going to proceed in view of what I think the board is deciding here.
I don't see, if they want to, if they have objections to, why this is done, I mean, I don't have a problem with them working with staff or, but there has to be, why are we taking out, you know, these findings of fact? I mean, what's the justification for it? I mean, it can't just be we don't like it. If the justification is that is not a factual element in this case, we did not install an alarm, or, you know, whatever, then I could see, you know, each individual line item being worked with staff of, the reason we do not want this in there is because this is not true. Okay, you know, then they can have a discussion about that. the one at the top about, you know, not, neither this consent nor any other part may be considered in future, I don't think you can put that in there at all. I think that, you know, that's because, you know, if this is a ongoing, potentially ongoing problem, or it could be an ongoing problem, you know, you would be looking at it as a, you know, your past violations, you know, would have an effect on future, you know, discipline. You know, are you a one-time offender, or is this a, you know, habitual, violation? So I don't think that's a non-starter, but I mean, I don't have a problem with them working with, you know, staff and Mr. Donald on, you know, but there has to be justification line by line why we're taking this out, not just blanket take them out.
Of course, no.
My concern is,
I would agree with you 100%. I mean, it's certainly not an unreasonable position to have justification for each revision. You know, and your suggestion that we potentially work with staff to do that, I think it's a good one, and I think that might be the best mechanism for actually getting this done. And look, frankly, again, I don't think we're necessarily that far apart. We're not trying to eviscerate the document or anything like that. I mean, our expectation or our hope was that this would be sort of a starting point for finding some middle ground on something that could potentially be solved. So I'm just wondering if you guys are amenable to a timeline for us to do that in terms of a submission of, you know, a justification for each line so you can actually have it in front of you. And we can go back to the drawing board and, you know, essentially eliminate some of these modifications as well based upon our conversation today. And if you want to, you know, we're happy to try to expedite this and get this done as quickly as possible, you know, depending on what you'd like to do.
So my concern, again, this is Alejandro Angel, is this is a case that's from last year already. We tried to get Mr. Roman to appear in May. We considered a case in June again. We offered you a consent in June. We're here in August looking at it again, and then we're going to have to come back again to look at something once more when I already think it's a pretty lenient offer. So, again, I'm open if we want to make motions, we'll vote all the motions up. But I'm not inclined to change anything.
I'm open to the idea of extending the time a little bit for them to sign the existing...
Yeah, if they want to take another 30 days or, you know, before September 25th, which is our next board meeting, if they want to have that time to decide whether to sign it or not, I'm...
So I'll make that motion.
Table it till next...
No, or that we just extend the time for them to sign the proposed consent agreement until September 25th.
The board's proposed consent agreement.
Yes. Thank you, Jason. Mr.
So we have a motion to allow till September 25th to sign the board offer consent agreement or proceed to, or refer to formal hearing.
Correct.
Second.
And we have a second from Mr. Marley. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. So, Mr. Lipari, I think that's, you guys, we're basically working off of the current board offer agreement, and you have 4 weeks to decide whether to accept it or move to hearing.
Okay, that's perfect. Just for clarity, so I do appreciate the extension here. But just for clarity, I built into that, do we have the ability to provide justification for a few proposed modifications? But I thought that's what we were talking about here. And also to potentially communicate with staff. Again, you know, our intention is not to completely alter this thing, and I don't think there's necessarily going to be a lot of heavy lifting. But to the extent that we do have, you know, some revisions, you know, I think it might be helpful to have a mechanism to potentially address those in advance of the next hearing, just so that we're not in a position where it's either again or an up vote or a down vote here.
Ms. Lipari, so the vote the board took was to have you sign the consent as drafted or go to hearing, so there's no room for negotiation, and it's based on the fact that we have been negotiating for a year and trying to work with you. So at this point, we're ready to proceed.
Okay, so just for clarity then, we will essentially come back telephonically next month to revisit our position on the consent decree, correct?
No, sir. You have until the next meeting to sign the agreement as proposed, if you agree to it, or your other option is to just decline to sign it, and we will move forward to a hearing. There's no negotiating room.
What is that formal hearing process with the other lawyer to be here?
Mr. Donald, our Attorney General, will explain the process.
Certainly. If the consent agreement as drafted and present on the board is not signed by September the 25th, at their meeting of the 25th, they would vote for this to proceed to a hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings. At that point, a complaint notice of hearing would be drafted and would be served upon you for a hearing date, a public hearing at the office, the Court Administrative Law Judge, at which you would have the opportunity to present evidence and witnesses to testify on your behalf. At the conclusion of that hearing, the Administrative Law Judge would have 20 days to provide a recommended decision. That decision would be transmitted to the board and to you, and the board at their next meeting would be able to accept, modify, or reject that recommended Administrative Law Judge decision. Following that, if the board were to accept that decision or accept it with modifications, you would have the opportunity to file for a rehearing should you have lost at the hearing. Following that, you would have the ability to appeal the case into the Superior Court system, where it would go through a judicial review at that level.
But ultimately, it's still the board's
decision
whether to accept or reject the administrative judge's ruling.
Yes, it would be up to the board because the board is ultimately the judicial authority of the case. The administrative law judge makes a recommended decision. The board then reviews the hearing, the transcript, the materials provided, and will either accept, modify, or reject that decision. So it is always possible the administrative law judge could find in your favor, and the board could review the materials and determine that, in fact, the administrative law judge had made a mistake, and they could find against you. Or the judge could find that a fine in a certain amount was appropriate, and the board could find that a fine in a different amount would be more appropriate in the circumstances. The ultimate judicial arbiter in the case would be the board.
Okay, thank you. Joe, do you have anything else?
Yeah, so in the event the board votes to submit this to a full hearing, what would be up for hearing and up for review is encompassed within case AL 18-003, right? So it's specifically what's set forth and delineated as the findings of fact within this proposed consent decree, correct?
No, it would be, it could conceivably be wider than that. I have not reviewed the entire case for all issues that could come up before the administrative law judge. The consent would be for present efficient resolution of the case prior to a proceeding to a hearing before the administrative law judge. Were it to go to that point, I would become the prosecutor in the case, and I would be prosecuting for any violations found in the investigation file for that case. So there could conceivably be additional charges I don't know at present.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Okay. Mr. Lipari, Mr. Roman, we appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Bye. Oh, I don't think so.
Who knows what else they've done? We did vote. Yeah, it was unanimous. Right?
Yeah.
I'll get him on the phone again. Okay. Are we ready to move to 8?
Just a clarifier, we
moved
on to number 8.
Yes. Yes, sir. We're going to start the 8s.
Did we do D's?
We did D's. We consented them. You're welcome, Jason. Well, you were babbling on. I kept consenting stuff.
Just skip right over that.
I think we're done. I mean, if somebody wants to double-check me, but I think we covered everything.
I think we did too, Alejandro.
Okay.
Let's go back and check.
Good work. Yeah, let's rehear them all again just to make sure.
2,000 pages per hour. Sorry. Going right.
That's like the biggest ever. Packet.
Freaking packet ever, yeah.
Been more than 5,600 pages?
Page number. 8A1. Do you remember page 2750?
Yes, I do, actually.
Yeah, okay. Okay, licensing consent agenda.
Chair, I move that we cancel licenses that have not been renewed for one full renewal period as listed in the packet.
Perfect. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion second. All in favor?
Wait. Give us a minute.
Are you in there?
Make sure.
Make sure we're not on there.
I looked last night. You're not on there.
That one meeting you missed, Mr. Jones, I told him to put your name on there just to screw with you for the next meeting.
That'd be hilarious. I would love that. I would love that.
Bold.
Yeah. I could show over by the office.
Printed in light gray.
All right. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Excellent. So, we go to policy matters, newest edition of the newsletter.
Are you guys able to access that website?
No, I wasn't able to.
Okay. So, that's going to be something that...
Can you show them here?
It's a Google document, so he's wondering unless you have Google.
Yeah. Unless you work for Solus, they convert Google documents pretty easily. You do. Ooh. I was impressed.
Yeah.
So we have incriminating photos of everybody in here, as well as a diatribe about the computer case. Kidding. Totally for the benefit of the AG's office, Alejandro, but thank you for helping me edit that document down. Yes. And Scott helped too.
Scott, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So can I ask to that point, so for everybody's benefit, there's a description of what happened with the computer program, just very general, mm-hmm. and where we're at. Can we ask people to verify their information at the end of that?
Thing. Yes, that's actually a great idea, because I've been getting emails, and so has Kurt, from people who have gone on to check, and it doesn't look like they're registrants anymore, thanks to the migration of the data.
Yeah, so that might help us clean up the data.
I just encountered one the other day. It was a local architect that I was actually searching for a different McLean, and his name came up, and it said expired, and he goes, I renewed.
Exactly. And I said, that's a perfect example of the problem we've been having with the data migration and why we're cleaning it. So let's add a line that says, please check your info.
And contact the board if you find any discrepancies.
Right. Turn yourself in so you can be the respondent and the alleger. That way it's a win-win.
Well, you should have read the whole document, and I knew it was classic. I went laughing to Patty. I'm like, okay, I just sent this to Alejandro and to Scott. Heads will explode. And, man, I know you so well now. From teasing you endlessly, he's like, you have to take this out, and this out, and this out, and this out. And I was like, okay, good. But then Scott weighed in, and I was pleased about that, so.
Yeah.
But it was fun, I hope.
Did you write those 3 pages just to mess with me?
I did. Send it. It made me feel better to write it, and so then I just sent it to Alejandro, because I didn't want all of you to think that I was out of my mind. He already thinks I am, so.
I can't. I think you are, too.
But it was great, because sure enough, It took him three times to convert the data, but man, it was,
it was worth it.
You were on top of it, yeah. He's very thorough, and he always gets the right, the meanings.
I would say contact the board office.
Okay.
I would stick the word office in there after board. We don't need people calling the board.
Yes,
and members.
Underline it so you can see it and put some contact information, whether it's the phone number or an email.
So, because we're on Google now, I decided to try using Google Sites to create the newsletter in a Google Sites way. I think it looks a lot better than what I was doing before, which is using the Microsoft Publisher and then turning that into a PDF. Different sizes of text and whatever that was always going on to make everything fit correctly. It just looked wonky, and so I much prefer this. I think it looks very nice. This is just one of the articles, but there's being able to navigate to the specific things that you want to read as opposed to just, you know, scrolling through a huge long PDF. I think people will appreciate that. And we can add pictures and things much easier. Mm-hmm. Since you got, you know, Jigu behind his vice chair's reports.
Wow, fancy.
Professional.
We could put the photo of him playing the guitar, but I think it is modern, and you can scroll.
Mm-hmm.
There
it
is. Yeah. So at any time,
take that picture today. same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's an architect. We got two shirts and two all ties. That's it.
Consistency.
That was last Christmas.
Yeah, and I'm not in it because I wasn't on the board.
You were. You just refused to participate.
Because I'm not on the board.
It's just,
there he is.
So look how get you in there.
Yeah, I want a black box where mine
is. Black
box.
Well, I had to take yours from the black website, I recall, and I had to really blow it up to try to get it.
Mm-hmm. He looks very reputable.
Yeah.
But, And I've been trying to get Gene to give me a new picture, but he isn't cooperating.
Yeah, so do you think there'll be a problem when we transmit this, Kurt? People just be able to click on the link?
That's what I was expecting it to happen, so I'm going to keep going at it.
You're pretty happy.
Yeah. I'm not going to send out a mass email until I know that link works 100%, because, gosh, I don't want those emails coming to me. It doesn't work. So.
Cool.
Good idea.
Just so you know, too, as part of the IT update, we're going to try to purchase Microsoft again because we learned that even though we have to use Google as our email, we didn't have to necessarily go with Google Docs, but no one at Asset told us that. So we now need to renew our Microsoft licenses, but Microsoft is much easier to use for drafting documents themselves. So we're going to try to use both. We have to use both. So this way, some things will be Google, but hopefully most documents will be Microsoft.
Let's see. I actually had this URL. It gives me the URL. That's what I sent to you guys. I put it into my Google right now, and it put me to the website, but for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because you have to have Google, and that would be a tragedy if that is the case.
But we can ask you.
So I'll definitely look into it.
Well, and it may work for you because you're logged in.
Let's see. And that's
your
the
account.
Thing.
Kurt?
If you use a Chrome,
you're logged in under your account, and so it's automatically going to let you into that site. So the glitch may be one of us on the outside. I mean, I use Chrome, but I can try the...
I'm still hoping it's not the case because I don't want to just be exclusive for Google.
Took photos of everybody.
In the blockade, I like it.
No. Scott, yeah. Did you see Scott spoke too?
So it took one a couple of weeks ago.
Yep. Yeah. In Scottsdale.
Darn, I missed it.
Okay.
I was there by text. They kept texting me, we're voting no.
You're pushing the
no button.
See?
Well, there I am.
Look how friendly Neil is.
Yeah.
Having fun.
Must have been drinking.
Probably. Had a bag of popcorn.
No, it was candy.
It was candy.
Nice.
But I didn't get any because Rob kept eating all of it.
I know. Welcome to our world.
I think we're getting off agenda here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're trying to show
our population that we're involved and interested in, our various communities, so.
Anything, I mean, also you would like to look at, I mean, without having actually read the articles, though, that's probably what usually you guys want to edit and verify before.
Okay. Oh, Alejandro will want to look at my direction.
No, it's your report. It's okay.
Maybe for, I don't know, can we...
Oh, like, see, I was very politically correct. Right?
That's a good one.
And that's my office. When did you take a picture of my office?
We were in our house.
That's fine. That's fine.
It's making getting licensed easier and safer for the public?
Yes.
But that sounds like you're licensing the public.
Well, also, safer for the public.
It also sounds like licensing, the easier. Process of licensing is dangerous.
Okay, we'll work on the title.
Either you're licensing the public or the licensing is dangerous.
How about licensure by endorsement?
Make licensing easier while preserving public safety. Oh, whatever.
All right,
whatever.
Let's work on the title.
Okay.
All right.
See, you shouldn't have shown it to us.
No, it's your newsletter.
But, by the way, speaking of licensure by endorsement, I mean, do we have draft language for it?
Yeah, you guys saw it, and we brought the modified Alejandro suggestions to Senator Kavanaugh, and then they took it and said, oh God, we need a new photo.
That's what they said?
That's what they said.
This is too distracting. So they're taking the language. It's very familiar to them because apparently he was the one that sponsored similar language for behavioral health, which is the newest licensure by endorsement, and I copied a lot of that. So we gave it to his person. We will get a chance to look at what they might do to it, so don't worry.
Would you send me the language when we get a minute, please?
I will, yes.
Thank you. I know you guys covered it last month, but...
See what you missed? Every meeting.
That's why I'm still here.
Yeah.
I need a person.
Okay, so newsletter.
Get me out of here.
Without you guys reading the actual articles, it's going to...
So, what do you think? You want to take a chance, or do you want to look at it again before we send it out?
Can it be sent out individually or something for everybody to see?
I'm certain I can do that. I would, as soon as I find that 100%, I can...
Except we'll violate open meeting.
We'll have a potential certain...
I don't have any skin in the game, so I don't care.
Oh. Okay.
None of them are my articles.
Can we designate a proofreader?
Do you want Scott to look at it?
I don't know. He might be the wrong guy.
Patty?
I was thinking a board member.
I was thinking Alejandro.
Just have one board member delegate a board member to say this looks good or this doesn't. Okay. Whatever he says is fine. Please. Well, I wrote on it, so I need that extra protection from somebody else.
Okay.
I'm no longer a board member.
It
has been.
Could have been a pretender.
Thanks, Alejandro.
Sure, I'll read it.
Okay.
I'll have to read it after it comes out anyway. When
there you go.
Yeah. When people start saying, why is Melissa saying this? Why is Melissa saying that?
I know.
Just kidding, Melissa.
I know. Okay. So we'll send it to Alejandro.
Curtin, you can try sending me the link again. I'll try it again.
I will do that.
Cool.
Six shapes.
Yes. If it's one, you just can't send it to everybody, or can't have a discussion about it.
Okay.
Okay.
9B. 9B is our budget, abbreviated strategic plan, and what I put together as our IT plan. The only thing that was in your packet was what I put together as the IT plan, which is based on a format that Asset had provided to us several years ago when we looked to bid for the previous computer vendor. The budget and what the state calls our strategic plan were put at your desk fronts. And Patty really took the lead on this for me. And so if you have questions, I want to defer to her. But before I do that, I just want to let you know The budget itself is the thicker document, and basically what it does is just repeat over and over again our appropriation and how we spent it this year and what we're projecting to spend next year. It is not easy to follow. It does include, our main fund is 2070, the technical registration fund, which is what we are allotted under our 32-106. So APHIS is the state's financial money calculating system, and it generates a lot of these numbers for us. So really what will look interesting to you is on the page that is titled Sources and Uses of Funds. Of course, it's not numbered because the system is really antiquated.
When I do the final one, it will be numbered, but I can't finalize it until we get one more piece of information.
So we have, this is the 2020 budget, but we're still anticipating estimates for 2019, which is not yet complete. We entered it on July 1st, so you can see our cash flow talks about our revenues and not our appropriation. So you'll see we estimate that our revenue will be going up, and then our appropriated funds are three or four lines down. It shows what we're allowed to spend pursuant to the legislature. And we are asking for more money in 2020 because of $150,000 we're thinking it will cost to make.
Which page are you on, Melissa?
It's not numbered, but it's titled Sources and Uses of Funds. We are looking at about $150,000 to build the renewals and credit cards for online, which is what we're asking for separately in this document.
Where do you see that? See that.
Right here. You'll see up here, cash flow summary, it talks about this is how much money we have, and then total appropriated.
It say 150,000.
It doesn't, but it says it later on. So you'll see as you go across, it goes up because we're going to be asking for more money.
Just to explain the budget process, this shows you what we spent and then what's appropriated for this year. For 2020, we can't just fill in what we want. 2020 will show what we were appropriated for this year, and then we filled out the funding issues pages where we asked for more money.
This is
it's a little hard to follow if you're not.
It's very hard to follow.
We spent $17,800 on out-of-state travel. That's what that says.
Yes,
which is what we actually are appropriated for.
Yeah. So, right, and then you'll see the expenditures is how much money we spent on personal services. Our staff is the biggest chunk of our money. And then employee-related expenses are all the insurance. So that's where the bulk of our budget goes, actually. And professional and outside services includes our ISAs with the AG's office for Scott services, as well as our ISAs with Asset for their help with computers, and Central Services Bureau for help with accounting issues and anything else, like when we contract for Mr. Kramer. I think he is also included in there. So like any temp services we employ.
Which one?
It's called professional and outside services because we have to separately contract for that. So you'll see they put money for our computer there. So that's why it looks like it's gone up from 52.7 to 293.6 because that's the extra money we're planning to spend on our computer.
And then the year after the 443 is just made up at this point?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Estimated.
So, professional and outside services, 52,000 this year, jumps up to 293.
Right.
Why?
Because we're going to be contracting for IT services. So that's why it's an estimate. It may not end up being exactly that much, but we have to account for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we account for it for this year, which is FY 2019 and into 2020.
Melissa, on your balance board for your cash flow summary, is that actual money not spent and just moving into the next year?
Yes. This is, we actually had at the end of fiscal 2018 about...
We'll lose over the next...
Yeah, and it carries through. And you'll see in another one of these sheets, it shows our whole fund.
So you have that money plus what they appropriate.
No, we have that money total between what we have in our little savings account and what we use is like a checking account equivalent. And what we don't use rolls back into our savings. Mm-hmm. But it's not, that's the lump sum figure.
There's actually a little square that shows you how the cash flow goes.
Well, I just see 000 for food. I'm not sure why that
is. Because we can't pay for meals.
Yeah, we can't pay for meals.
Yeah, there are line items that don't apply to this.
This is the same formula every state agency follows, guys. So we're lucky we only have one funding source because, like, state parks and the AG and all those places, the ADOT, they get federal money and they have to account for all of it. Luckily, we don't. But this packet also contains information about our enforcement fund, where it's a much smaller amount of money, but we have to account for it in the same way.
The paid Scott's, it's just a computer. It's not real.
It is real money. We actually pay.
Really?
Yes, we electronically transfer funds to the AG's office on a quarterly basis to pay for part of Scott's salary.
The Colorado thing on there.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a lot of the same information in the following documents, but I just thought you'd be interested to see it since we're required to submit it by September 1st, and I don't want you guys to have to be asked, well, how did Melissa and Patty account for our money? This is how we have to do it. It isn't the easiest process, but...
to answer Steve's question, there's a page that didn't print out that actually shows for 3 years in a row how much was our beginning balance, how much did we spend, what revenues came in. So at the end of that year, what was the fund after revenues and expenses, and then it goes to the next year, and then it goes to the next year. So that you can see into the future that we're maintaining a steady reserve of about $1 million while spending about $2
million. One question on administrative adjustments of $465,000 on fiscal year 18.
That was last year's expenditure on computers that came out of the prior year.
Okay.
So this is just where they put it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's the second half of the GL contract.
Yeah.
Got it.
So OSPB, the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting, helps us with this. We actually have to work with them and submit this report to them by September 1st. So they apparently use these figures to help put together the governor's budget request, which comes out early in January. And along with this budget, we have to submit what JMAD's looking at, which is our IT plan, basically. Or it's actually our strategic plan, which has three goals, talking about how rapidly we process applications, how rapidly we investigate complaints, and then respond to public records information. These are not goals that obviously we came up with in a formal strategic planning session. It, again, was something we inherited from the state. And you can see how we project our numbers through actual and estimated figures on page one and further on.
So the sources and uses of funds, you have professional and outside services of $52,000, but yet on this other sheet it shows $61,000. Why is there discrepancies on signing even the bottom line number?
It might be because it's bringing in the funding issues. So we have an appropriation. If we need more money, we enter funding issues. So that sounds like a So the two funding issues we're requesting money for is IT and new board chairs.
Yes. on the following page, right after sources and uses of funds, the extra money you're seeing may be accounted for here because we're projecting ergonomic chairs will cost...
Zero.
It's like Carlin broke for the other.
Yeah.
$1,000 a chair.
I think we were saying 15,000, but Patty, it does look like we're saying zero.
I'll explain that to you later.
Okay.
It has to do with how you go about asking for the money.
Come on, Patty.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And Patty, what do you know about what's going to be happening between 2019 and 2020 where we lose 3,000 professional licenses? Is there something that you know that we should all be aware of?
Absolutely.
Like
actually,
a purge or something?
What was being reported is a...
It wasn't accurate.
Yeah.
So it looks like in 17 we had 50,100.
Yep.
And we're estimating a little growth, but we actually dropped to 45.
Well,
that's the cleaning of the data.
We don't know where Alicia got those higher numbers because we don't see the.
Yeah, it depended on who did it each year. Like, if we included everyone who was active, we would only have 30,000. So 45 is a more accurate description because it includes about 15,000 delinquents who can, in that three-year period of time, just pay late fees and renew and be active again. So Alicia may actually have used delinquent numbers and those that we hadn't yet canceled, but that should have been canceled to come up with the 50,000.
Okay. We have 45. We expect growth.
Yeah.
To 53,000?
Yeah.
I was just afraid something was going to happen. Like a duck in the cover or something for 3,000 less. I mean,
it's just the structural engineers.
Yeah. I'm just reporting what we know to be fact now. And
yeah.
I think it's just a matter of, like Melissa said, Alicia was reporting them. She may have used a different combination.
Right. And in the time I've been here, never questioned about this.
Oh, I'm sure. This is just government busy work.
So I do want to talk about the strategic plan.
Some of my taxes are going to pay.
It touches on Alejandro's concern of approaching the, our IT development in stages. Our first priority that we talk about is getting renewals and online payments online. And then only when that's up and working, move on to looking at online applications and other functions. So for this next year, we're focusing on getting those renewals.
And we just think it's a much better way to proceed with the IT project, having had the disaster we had in the past. We bit off more than we could chew. They bit off way more than they could chew. We're a small staff, 20 people. We can't dedicate 4 people full time. So we're thinking, let's make online renewals and credit card payments a reality first, and then move on to all the applications
and enforcement.
Right.
That's great. Yeah, 90% of what people need is just their renewals.
Exactly. And the back end is actually working much better for enforcement. So the one thing that we'll need for them is the ability for the public to complain online. But none of their other actions occur online. But, I mean, the ability for you guys to, like, go on the website and update your office address or phone numbers or whatever, that might come through in the renewals, but it may take the second phase. And we just think it's a smarter way to proceed. We have actually talked to 2 different vendors. So the vendor that we're working with to clean our data submitted a bid to us, which is where we get the $150,000 for renewals and online credit card payments. And we're looking at a bid from, an informal bid from Deloitte, which runs Salesforce and also now is using another vendor called BackIT or something like that. So they're going to hopefully get us an informal bid by this Friday. We'll see. We have to click send on the budget on Friday, so hopefully they'll be timely. But in this way, we're not just making up numbers. We have actual support for them when OSPB says, well, how much money are you thinking? You know, I just think it's a better use of our funds as well.
And how do you contract for it? Do you have to put a you know, request for qualifications again, or?
No, actually, because the vendors are already approved by the state. We can just say...
What we'll probably have to do is get 3 bids or something like that. We won't be able to just say we want these guys.
Right.
We can get the 3 and then say we want these guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where the lovely written document that I sent here in 9B goes to help us with this, because this is something... I've already sent it over to OSPB, but it's something ASSET will want, talking about our IT plan.
Got it.
Okay. So, what do you think? Concerns? Questions? Cool.
Good. I think it's the right thing to do, to start with the easy stuff.
I'm a little reluctant with online complaints and with... would guide us away from that as long as we can, because we become Yelp. Everybody has the opportunity to complain. It's going to be, I don't know, this guy with a survey truck ran me off the road. You know, it's going to be crazy. You'll get every complaint rather than obligating an alleger to follow a nice form and email it, whatever.
We already have the nice form on the website. They just have to download it and fill it in and mail it. And so it would be the same form available to them. Just they'd be able to click send and it would go into a queue for Mr. Carlin to look
at. I think I learned this working at the county, where I got a complaint that said that the paint on the stripes in the road was peeling off. So we'll get a lot of
safety kind of
complaints. And some things we
it's a life safety issue.
Yeah. Some things we don't have jurisdiction over. Yeah. So we do get a couple complaints every now and then that we say, you know, it's not really our place to investigate this. And that will continue, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. I'll
see,
crawl back
the
in my
complaint
hole.
Yeah. Kurt's called up the complaint form and
completely online, specific on here. So.
Yeah, we just can't click send yet. So.
So then, other than the computers and that sort of thing, do we make enough money with fees to cover the expenses?
Yes, we do.
Even with computers, the budget looks like it's growing a little bit.
Yeah. Our reserve. We just have to ask permission to get the $150,000 out of our savings account.
I got you.
It's our money. We just have to ask for permission to spend it.
And they may not grant it, or they may give us less than we asked for. It all depends. But I feel confident that with a couple of informal bids, we can say, this is what we're looking at. We're not just making this money figure up thin air. Like last year, OSPB said, well, let's just tell them you want $450K. And I'm like, no. And yeah. So, and like for the cleanup of the data, we had some money we projected, like $68,000 from last budget. It's going to cost more than that, but we had vacancy savings and other funds that we were able to use because we had estimated and then we had savings. So before it rolled back into our savings, we can use it basically the way we want. We have 2.3 mil, and yeah, we separate it out and say we're going to spend it in this way, but push comes to shove, we can spend it pretty much. Like, we could spend it all on trips. Not really, but you know what
whoa,
I mean.
Whoa. That's not.
But you know what I mean. It's like, as long as we had the money and we have a various need, we can move things around out of these line items for sources.
So we're not costing the state anything.
No. And we're still contributing 10% of all our revenue to the general fund.
Does that change 10%, 9%, 11%?
No, it's always 10% unless the legislature changes it. Statutory.
And would you have to go to savings possibly to do the 10%?
No.
Never.
No, savings grows on its own depending on how many licenses and renewals applications we get each year. So that's why we project it's going to go up a little. Cool. All right. Are you guys cool with us clicking send once we...
Yes. Do you need a motion or just... okay.
We just want it on the record that you saw it.
We'll ask questions about it. And Thank you.
Director's report, Melissa.
No, I stuck in something new because
did
I got
you?
A call from the Auditor General on, last week on Thursday. Do you guys remember a couple years ago when the Industrial Commission got in trouble for an abuse of the money that they were paid to do state work? Probably 2 or 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Regardless, all agencies were then audited to find out how much money we pay you to do board work.
Not
right.
Enough.
Right. We are among a group of boards that pays $30 a day, obviously, as you know, because it gets direct deposited into your accounts.
Oh, yeah.
And after that, and it was apparently a statute went through in the 2016 session giving the Auditor General this authority to audit everybody. So they came and visited. They looked at that board member orientation manual that I created for you guys and said, this is really good, but you need to define what a day means, because in the orientation manual, I say something like, where did I put it? You guys will love it. I email back and say, basically what we have is perfect, but they said no, okay. Per diem, I talk about per diem, travel policies and procedures, and then travel claims, and I explain in per diem that legislature determined this board may reimburse its members $30 per day for work you do on the board's behalf, such as reviewing applications, preparing for a meeting, attending a meeting, for mileage, getting to and from the meeting, as well as for traveling for the state. Each month you will receive $30 for reviewing board meeting materials and $30 for attending a meeting. If you work on applications or attend other meetings for the board, you will be compensated $30 each day worked. And then we submit a timesheet for all of you. So like if you do review applications and we get one back from you on like August 21st, you'll get $30 for doing that. But say JFU, this is their concern, looks at 5 applications on August 21st, we're only paying him $30. So the auditors want us to define what we think is fair. What does the board consider a day for compensation when completing application reviews? Because JFU could be smarter than JMAD by spacing out
exactly
5 applications and getting one, a day and getting $30 to do, so $150 versus poor JMAD would only get 30.
Well, maybe I am smarter.
So,
in that case.
You do what you do to get the job done.
Right.
It's 5, it's 1, it's 10.
Well, but they didn't like that answer.
Well, what did they do all
they
day?
Said, well, and then, so then
get
I,
what
come I up said, like where's the statutory authority requiring me to define a day? And they couldn't come up with it. But then they whined and said that we have to be politically correct and we have to have a policy is what they recommend defining a day. Do we mean time spent more, 2 hours? Or, 4 hours less, you get $15. 4 hours more, you get $30. I know, it's splitting hair.
It's for $30.
I know, I said that. Hey. And they don't care.
The only reason I got on board.
What about the green card?
It's $30.
Will we be compensated for...
If you get reimbursed by the National Council, we can't reimburse you again.
Just our travel expenses.
What about our day that we spend?
Yeah.
I guess you could, yeah.
I've never been paid for a day.
I think we have a lot of back pay owed.
Is your day 2 hours?
Oh, yeah, I'm filing a complaint.
True.
These are long hours.
True.
Travel days.
Yeah, that's right.
But then NCWS gives them some checks.
Yeah, but it's to compensate for your expenses for mileage, travel,
right.
Food.
Right, which is what reimburse. Okay, so put in for it. If you're traveling,
we're joking.
We can. If you got 3 or 4 days, we'll pay you another $120 or whatever it is. I know, guys. Believe me. I argued. I'm like, I don't see that there's legal authority for this. This to me is splitting hairs. They're like, we don't care. We recommend And of course, you don't have to do what we say, but we're going to tell the legislature that you're not complying. And then I became very nice.
So they want a definition of a day?
Yes.
It's a 24-hour period. I'm sorry, I just,
I'm
trying to get my head around this thing.
But I think it's fine to say, you know.
And you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but at least I don't sit there. If I've got I've got two applications in the queue right now, I'm going to sit down and blow through both of them.
Right.
And, not blow through, but review them carefully, get them done, and get them off my plate.
Right.
I am not going to go, oh, I'm going to review this one today, and ooh, I'll review that one tomorrow.
That's $30.
Yeah, I guess $30.
So
$30.
What I'm thinking is we can say.
That's not how we think.
1 hour.
I'm actually,
I think salted. Is equivalent to 1 day. I think we could do that. One hour of review is equivalent to 1 day. I don't know how long, and that's
then
what
do we
I said.
Have to,
what do we
have
say?
To send you
we don't know how long it takes board members to evaluate.
Per task, right? I get two applications in the same day. I get two applications out the same day. That's one task.
Maybe that's what it is. You define it as a task.
Yeah.
A task in a given 24-hour period, and it doesn't matter whether it's three applications or 12 or one.
It's just, this is so stupid.
You're working on.
Now listen, I think, you know, if it's a board meetings and review of meeting materials are a day, those are expected to be a day. Application review, nobody does more than 4 hours at a time, so just say half an hour for every, or half a day for every time you review applications. You know, because 4 hours or less, you get paid half a day, so.
Okay,
if you
so
do, if you're doing applications.
Okay. So 4 hours or less, you get $15.
Yeah.
If you do more than 4 hours, you have to tell us it took you more than 4 hours to get the whopping $30.
But the meetings and the prep are assumed to be more than 4 hours, I think.
Yes.
All right.
The phone call to tell you that our billing rates is going to be more than the $15.
No. Hey, keep it simple. Just do that. Half a day for less than 4 hours, full day for more than four. We assume review and application is less than four. We assume prep and meeting attendance is more than four, unless told otherwise.
But how do you track it along? Who's responsible for the administrative
oversight? Well, when we send you that
oversight
cover sheet, you have to write in now. Neil Jones spent 8 hours reviewing applications, and we'll give you $30. JMAD says he spent 2 hours, he gets 15.
Give me my 15.
Yeah. That's what we're going to have
to do. So what you're saying, you're
going to
start issuing.
Well, but we don't have to do
it. Should
you type sheets now?
Wait.
We already send you.
I've never received anything.
You review applications.
Yeah, but I haven't said I've worked 8 hours.
No. I don't think anything really needs to change. If we have the policy, that's all. I mean, we just, if you get an application from us, you assume we work half a day.
Okay. Give you $15. Are you guys good with that?
Yeah, don't send me anymore.
Well, and then I said, you know, how do we get the
$30
upped? We'd have to go to the legislature to ask for it. Because the medical board gets like $250.
Give us $29.
And I'm like, well, I want that for my professionals. They have as much education and experience. Well, you have to go to the legislature and ask for that. So
I think that's a battle for another day.
Yeah, that's kind of how I thought too. All right, we'll go with. So I have to modify our glorious packet one to add this for when we have Carmen. Oh, and by the way, now you're getting all the apps, unless Ed wants to stay and review apps as part of our architect application.
We can help out occasionally.
Okay, good.
Please,
occasionally.
What about the new person?
She's gonna come up.
Hey, I'm cheap labor because I won't get paid at all.
That's true.
That's right. Take your $50 while you can.
Chip to
Neil.
Yeah.
He can pay me $30.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll do it for you.
Neil,
all right, guys. Thank you for humoring me on that.
Yeah,
I will say 4 hours or less equals $15. So see a bump in your score or not. I don't know.
Actual reduction, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's
fine.
Do it 8 hours.
Okay. But we're complying, so.
I have no idea how much they pay me. I don't even pay attention to it.
I don't know.
You're still on the
exactly.
You're still on
the I know, but
yeah.
it goes up all over.
Okay.
The place.
Director's report?
What was that? 130, so. All I have is in car.
That wasn't. That was just policies. Aren't you guys happy? Oh, and APHIS, who supposedly put all our numbers in for the budget, has been on the fritz, so I don't know how much money we've spent or what we have left in the budget.
Cool.
This month. So.
Next.
I wrote that right in there, Alejandro, but I don't know that you saw that. Okay, let's see. Harlan had team building at the ballpark.
Yeah.
You heard about the computer system. Rob and Kurt have been corresponding pretty regularly about the data cleanup with the IT partners vendor.
Why did they have to take annual leave for the team?
Because we can't let state employees off without, like if they have to, they want to go and pay their respects to Senator McCain, they have to take personal leave.
Yeah.
That's why everyone wants to work for you, Neil.
It's the government.
I heard about the beer tap, too.
That is unreliability.
Hey, Neil.
Yep. Okay.
Is the beer tap thing true?
I got three. I'm on over.
I'll be there for project meetings.
I'm on over. Yeah.
Regarding the potential complaint, I have emailed the AG's office in state procurement repeatedly and emailed Scott. And Scott has emailed the AG's office repeatedly to find out the status of where we are with maybe getting some of that money back. And no one has responded. So I've been quite aggravated, but I have been polite.
So there's statute of limitations for whatever it is for the notice of complaint, right? Notice of complaint is 6 months?
Yes.
For them to file a complaint?
Has run. Our statute has not. And they know that it's my preference that we try to recover some of the money we spent for naught.
Yes.
And yet, I can't do it myself, and neither can Scott. The state has taken the position that even though it was our money and our
project, I think Scott wants to.
Getting into something here that may be legal strategy pertaining to potential litigation.
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know if you have questions, but that's where it stands.
No.
Okay. No executive session. Thank you.
Thank you.
So more info when it comes.
I think keep pursuing our options. I think it's all.
So you know, after July, we took the language over to Senator Kavanaugh, who's very well respected, and he is sponsoring our bill to pursue licensure by endorsement. So that's a good thing. And I think it will help people get licensed. It just means that if you're licensed in another state and you've been in good standing, we respect the sister state's determination that you met their qualifications. And you can come to us with a much simpler application for endorsement, like a one-page thing, and just show us your verification that you're in good standing, and we will register you without having a council record or with a council record if you want it transmitted, but we won't need
it. $400.
Right.
I'm surprised that NCWS and NCARB aren't all over that.
We announced it in NCWS. No one had heartburn there. NCARB, I expect a different reception.
Yeah.
Actually, NCARB said you were a genius with that legislation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I
do say in there that if you have a council record and you want to spend $400, you can. So hopefully that makes them happy.
Thank you. I'm
a genius.
In July, she said, no, I thought this was genius.
See?
Put on your evaluation next year.
Did you see the email I sent about the gentleman from NCWS?
Yeah, but I looked the gentleman up online after he said that.
He's a surveyor from Florida, and I took it at face value.
Enough said.
Surveyor and Florida.
Listen, and we did take the opportunity to clean up the language on comparable state or foreign country, whatever it said, just to make it narrow. Okay.
We did.
Good, thanks.
I did not ignore you.
Foreign countries.
It included what I gave to Senator Kavanaugh, included the amendments that you all wanted.
Yeah.
He may decide to change it, in which case we'll need to talk to him, but it's kind of part of the process. And just so we're being polite to Senator Mitchell, who is one of our registrants, he's a home inspector.
Mm-hmm.
I contacted him and asked for a meeting. That hasn't been scheduled yet, but maybe this week or next week, he said. And I just want to let him know that we're going to do this, because I think it will also work for home inspectors, so.
Yeah.
So you guys already know, but JFU was reappointed. The governor's office is working through their process on Neil and Steve. I don't know exactly what that process is.
They've been talking.
I know.
Let you go.
And then we haven't heard about Alejandro or JMAD's replacements, and only the people that this governor have officially appointed are on the list. So only five of you are on the governor's list, even though we have nine of you serving. I don't understand how public records law doesn't apply to the governor's office, but...
Is that the governor's office?
But
a real question is, you know, when our terms expire, we still stay on the board officially and count towards a quorum and everything else
yes.
until someone is appointed in our place.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Yes. So,
but we don't have to.
No.
No, you can retire.
You're doing it out of the goodness
and
of
I am.
Just to show that JMAD is the longest serving board member
ever.
In board history, he gets a medal.
Woo-hoo!
Holy
look at
medal.
That! Woo! Look at that!
And then we have medals for Alejandro and Ed too, but I had to say that. Just
for what?
Wow.
Well, because
Ed's leaving, you didn't get anything.
Know there's very little in the way of recompense for this, but we really appreciate how hard you guys have worked, and these medals are a trip. I couldn't resist. Dedicated service to BTR.
Ooh,
so they're not as nice as the ones you get.
Does that have to turn in as
is there an insignia that goes for the NCARB meetings that they can take?
You know, I could wear it. It's just just kind of fun.
To the
but
prom.
Does
yeah.
that have to turn in? You have to turn in your badge. Remember
so,
badges.
You know, you guys work really hard, and you're really smart, and I'm really proud of how we work as a board, and it's because you guys dedicate the time. Whereas $15 doesn't, you know, really...
But this makes it...
It makes it better,
all,
right?
Yeah,
right? Saying. And Neil wants a shirt like yours, so...
I don't
want
to
made it when... Yeah.
When Neil wants
so,
a shirt, sir.
Fine,
so after 4 years,
a lot, you guys.
I think I'll wear it. I'm
so
also keeping my badge that you gave me 10 years ago.
I did give you a badge, I know.
Badge.
So,
I
selfishly,
HLB
I hope you can all stay, but
I
know it's hard, but we appreciate it.
Okay. I'll stay as long as Jason stays.
Oh, wow.
Well, do that, man.
I mean,
good luck with that.
You'll be here forever.
But you got a medal.
I did. Do I get one every year? Like
we could do it. Dedicated
get a participation
year.
I look like that one of these medals. I look like Michael Phelps.
That's right.
We could
next
do
year,
that,
next
actually.
Year, you get a participation trophy.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, I need someone to come with me to NCARB's meeting in St. Louis, October 12 through 13. So Ed will be off the board.
New person.
New person.
Maybe Neil wants to go.
New person.
NCARB meeting with me.
Oh, no,
member
I'm talking
board.
About the new Cheers. Person replacing.
Yeah.
New
oh,
person.
Yes. Her name is Carmen Wyckoff. She has been on the State Facilities Board. The governor's office recruited her to replace Ed. She has been licensed here 5 years, but she is licensed in other states. I want to say Pennsylvania.
Virginia
and
Pennsylvania.
Virginia. I spoke with her, gave her kind of an idea of what we do and how hard it can be.
Did you talk about the $15?
I did not.
Did you tell her she's going to St. Louis in October?
No, I did not.
You better bring that up.
my recommendation would be that you don't not send someone new to
right.
the president's
yeah.
meeting.
And
it's,
I think
yeah,
it might
that's
be
not the right kickoff. For
it's,
you know,
it's a great opportunity for cross-pollination.
Yes.
So if an engineer or a geologist or a surveyor can't go, but, you know.
When do you have to...
I have to report by September 10. I have to sign up. I haven't signed anyone up yet. So let me know. St. Louis, you know, it's not as long as a plane flight as Atlanta, but, you know.
You see, it's the 20th, right?
It is the 12th and 13th at the Hyatt, which is right down the street from the Arch. They have
They just remodeled the arch, didn't
they? Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I think that's where we stayed for the...
They put the freeway underground and put a park on top. And
I have the agenda if anyone's interested and wants to see what they'll be talking about. It is a day and a half. They have...
That's a long way to go for a day and a half.
But they have lunch and reception, talking about themselves and model law updates and all that
stuff.
They
have to spend $45.
We can't go. We've got to work.
Yeah, we do.
Applications. Okay, so but if no one wants to go, I will go by myself, and then you never know what could happen.
Take your son with you.
So say, if you don't find anybody, let me know somewhere around the 7th, and I'll just check. I may or may not be able to make it, but and because, if I'm still on the board, maybe there's somebody new.
You know, I spoke at the NCWS meeting, and I introduced board members and said I had to be nice because they didn't know what I was going to say in my presentation, and then JFU stopped recording. Anyway, so I don't know. Do you want to talk about NCWS or?
The first thing I'd like to do is thank Kurt and Orlean for taking their Saturday to go to the training.
Yep.
To the enforcement.
Really appreciate your interest and participation in that, especially on a Saturday.
And they have representatives from ASBOG there, so I'm hoping that NCWS is going to help because it's looking like they're going to deregulate geologists in Texas. And if that happens, that's a slippery slope because Texas has a decent number with the oil and gas.
No kidding.
So
sure do.
Yeah, so we're sending a fairly large contingent to the ASBOG meeting. It'll be, you know, Steve, and Eric is already on their board, but Patty and I, and you're not going. Okay. So, and then they've asked me to present at the ASBOG meeting, too, so.
Yeah. At NCES, I mean, there wasn't anything that affected us. They're doing well financially. They committed to donating $1 million a year for 3 years to Engineers Without Borders.
Yeah, that was a two-hour debate. You would have loved it, Jim.
Oh, I'm sure. This is the same old geezers from the same states that always get up there and yak every time.
And they announced their new CEO. The new Jerry is another old white southern dude who has only worked...
Dave Cox?
With a small... Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, with Kentucky.
With Kentucky, which is a... engineer, surveyor only board. I don't know.
Most of them are.
I know. Alejandro worked with him on the finance committee, and he's an accountant. So that's where their emphasis
is. Oh, he is an accountant.
He is, yeah. I read the whole bio just because I was curious. But, yeah, so he starts October 1st.
Is Patty sad?
Patty, I think, is over it.
Yeah. It was... I thought it would be Patty, actually, but no.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was NCWS, and then JMAB is famous. And Rob's their poster boy now.
I wasn't there.
You were there in spirit. They channeled you all the time.
That's true.
And you did have some split votes. Gene and JFU and Alejandro argued over several things.
Yeah.
It was entertaining.
I was the one who voted no.
Vote no on all the stuff. Doesn't matter.
Hey, just a random question. Are we still on item 10?
No.
We're on 13 now?
I know.
Fine.
Oh, boy. Okay, so director's report, yeah. Though. Anything else, Melissa?
Well, the licensing numbers are as accurate as we can possibly get. The enforcement numbers, as you can see, I wrote that. We have lots of cases for formal hearings, so we're sending an updated list to Scott with some requests for more hearings.
Scott, and thanks for doing all of those. I mean, I know it's...
And we have no cases older than 2017, for sure.
Good.
Sure. And even, yeah, for sure. And even in 2017, there's only like six.
Nice job, everybody. Very good.
So hopefully next month I'll have
more accurate in terms of numbers, but
right now.
I think that's pretty good.
Good.
Cool.
So the only thing we have older than 17 is Jason Madison. Still on the board,
pretty much.
Okay, board chairs report. I have nothing to report. Standing committees. L&R.
Nothing.
Well, we do have something for L&R now. Surveying policy.
Surveying policy. So, guess we need to schedule a meeting. Try to get a quorum.
I know. Well, cooler weather.
You can stay on the committee even if you're not a board member, right?
Yes.
You stay on the committee. Okay. Good.
And I've agreed to stay as chair of that if the chair so desires that.
That'd be great.
Yes, please.
Who knows what the next chair is?
Yeah. Who knows? Home Inspector Rules and Standard Committee.
They have a meeting scheduled September 12th. Yeah. And we're going to talk about 30 parallels, and we're going to talk about several other things that... Yeah, I came up with several new things for the agenda to discuss, just so we're covering our bases, you know, with questions from the public, you know, that we're not sitting fallow with home inspectors.
Good. Board member reports on outside activities. ASBOG, Monterey.
Being October, yeah. Going and to the shore.
Yep, and we talked about Texas. Barb?
Patty is going with Jack up to Toronto, and that's at the same time I am going to Portland for FARB, so the end of September. And then we're sending Rob to Clear, which is just a couple days before, so we all kind of overlap at the end of September.
Okay.
It took me 3 years to find out what all those things meant.
Yeah. I know, all the acronyms.
I'm just figuring it out now I'm gone.
Patrick Corn.
And Carb?
So a couple things, since Melissa brought it up, had a staff member in my office who has some medical conditions that required accommodations, and when she went in to sign up for her exam, she signed up, and then she pays her money, and then it goes over to start scheduling, and then it starts talking about all the things you're not allowed to bring into the test room, and she goes over to the Prometric site. And it says, if you require this, you have to apply for accommodations. Well, she tried to apply for accommodations, and they said, oh, well, you're going to have to reschedule, and you're not going to get your money back. And she comes to me, and she's literally in tears, and she goes, I don't know what to do. So I didn't feel right calling NCARB direct, so I called Melissa, and I says, you know, this just does not sound right. And so Melissa made a few calls to NCARB, and at first got the same kind of response, and then
I said,
escalated.
ADA accommodation?
Yeah.
Shall I speak to Mike Armstrong about how inquiry
yeah.
from
so
are violating?
She escalated a little bit,
ADA?
And
yeah.
they gave her an exam credit,
yeah,
and then she's now signed up, got her accommodations, everything, but I didn't get a chance to deal with it in Nashville
okay.
this weekend, but I intend to work with, I'll probably reach out to Guillermo because he does the programming, because
yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, that online interface for the exam sign-up ought to just have a checkbox that says,
right.
Do you require accommodations?
Absolutely.
You check the box, another dialog opens, and you fill it out and say,
yep.
This is what I need,
okay.
And you're done. And you should only have to do that once.
Right.
Once you have accommodations approved,
yep.
You shouldn't have to apply
Can't
for
believe
it.
That.
Yeah, it was just...
Yeah, she was pretty upset.
Yeah, she was not happy.
I made the same suggestion to the car. Of course, we don't have control over what they do,
yeah.
But yeah, I got a lot of nice emails after.
Yeah, but I think we'll... I don't intend to let that one go. And it's not...
What?
She had some resources, but others may be losing.
It's
who knows
true.
How much money's been lost?
Right.
I mean, she has something that's pretty common in society these days, but any of those people could require accommodation.
Yep, it's true. And, you know, it's really incumbent on them. She wasn't even an applicant of ours because she had the
yeah,
right
she
degree
did the direct,
and could apply,
direct apply
directly with NCARB. And yet, it does reflect badly on us because we're the ones having to require the taking of the exam.
Right.
So if we need to work with them, it will
So then I did attend the Regional Leadership Committee meeting in Nashville. We were doing planning for the kickoff of the 100-year centennial celebration of NCARB. I think we're going to have some really good meetings. It was really, the discussion was really good because in spite of the fact that I kind of went in thinking, NCARB's really going to take this one over, and there was a lot of pushback, and it's more about the regions, I think, more than ever. So I'm working on drafting the agenda for the WestCARB meeting and looking at a more outcomes-based approach to how we handle that meeting rather than just a data dump.
Glad to have had a positive effect.
You
know what it is next year? Is it again at the end of
June? This would be the regional summit.
It'll be in Nashville.
The national is in early June.
Early June.
I think, or mid-June. I have the dates. I can get them to you. But, and we will probably at that meeting be discussing some bylaws and rules changes at the regional level.
Okay. And CES, we already touched on it. Next annual meeting is in D.C.
So is NCARB.
I might go to that one if I'm still around, which I will be.
We'll make sure you have a spot.
Even though I hate NCWS, but I love Washington.
I want to say something since it's not on the
agenda. What is the suggested topic? Future board meeting, September 25th. Suggested topic for future agendas, anything? Okay, then we're going to adjourn.
So I just want to thank everybody for 6 great years. I didn't think I'd get I've really enjoyed this. I've never seen a more collaborative group of people. I think we all really work together well. And I've enjoyed it. I'm going to miss it. It's been a lot of work.
You will be missed.
Thank you. Yes. A lot.
You can reapply for the structural position. I know there's someone else on board that really would want to be. I already tried to recruit Leroy and John. I went on the hall. I'm like, come on.
But Melissa, you've done a fabulous job of creating a culture in this office. I've been privileged to see a change over many years because I've been involved with the board for 20 plus years through the AIA and things like that. And the staff, you guys are top notch. Scott, probably my favorite AG rep over the 6 years. You have done an outstanding job. And I really appreciate it. So thank all of you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're not completely gone, obviously. Good to see some of you at NCARB, but and L&R and things like that. And I expect an invite for the holiday party.
Of course.
Yeah, I will come for that. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I don't know what we're gonna do without you.
We could call him.
Yeah, we might. Otherwise.
Cool.
Yeah, thank you.
What happened to Jack?